in the broadest sense of the word safe. So I can charge myself up to a third of a million bonds. Should I say this?
Give my creation life!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Thank you.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html, where you have access to not one, but four separate chat rooms. Maybe more one day, who knows? Anyway, the hardest job on earth is not doing the research to find out what makes things tick. It's trying to get people to understand there might very well be something different than what the book says. But either way, you know, in this day and age, if you're listening to me right now, you're using electricity. And there are a lot of people out there that, you know, just don't have access to some of the luxuries that all of us got. However, I'd like to bring that luxury to everyone in the world, but in order to do that, because they did say that we needed clean, renewable, alternative energy sources, I went into a mode of research to where I wanted to not just know what electricity was, but I wanted to know what was actually going on. And so I researched all different types of, you know, ways to generate electricity. And when I started listening into the actual terminology of what people's explanation was, and to the extent of what the school book says, it gets really complicated. Unless you are specifically studying electricity or electrical engineering or, you know, to become an electrician and so on, then you have to go to school and you have to learn all the terminology and you got to be able to learn some math and stuff, and it gets really super mind-boggling. You know, so some people just aren't really all interested into going into math and physics and all that kind of stuff. And so basically the general understanding that everybody got, you walk over there, you turn the light switch on, the electricity makes the lights work. You don't know exactly why it works, but you just do. You know it works. There's a lot of forces of nature that act like gears in a machine. If you understand how to tap into those forces of nature, then you can actually get work done. And then what we really want is to be able to get work done, because, you know, human bodies are pretty impressive, but they do have limitations as far as, you know, whenever you eat a sandwich or something, you give yourself some energy, and then you go out there and you work real hard and you burn that sandwich off. So, you know, it's there's a renewable energy source out there available for you. You go out there, you make some food, go out there, grab your fruit off of a tree, and you put that food in your body, and your body turns it into energy that then in turn gives you the capability of go from point A to point B. It's like putting gasoline in your car. There's a whole lot more to it than meets the eye, what's going on in that entire system that is your body. It's pretty impressive. But, you know, not trying to turn everyone into some sort of electronics whiz or electrical engineer, just giving them a simple understanding of what my research is all about. It's the hardest job on earth. It's hard to try to get people to see that there might very well be a different way, because, you know, my grandpa used to say all the time, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, it's not necessarily broke, but wouldn't you want to be able to use it more efficiently? That's what I'm thinking, because when you listen to the people out there in the alternative energy community, you'll notice there's terminology that bounces around out there. Over unity, zero point, free energy, and what was the other one? Perpetual motion, that's it. You get something started and it's self-contained, it'll generate its own power. And there's a whole lot of reasons why they say that's not even remotely possible, because of losses in the system. Well, losses is due to lack of engineering, and if you don't engineer something to be super precise, then you're going to have wobbles, or you're going to have resistance, and all the things that slow down what we know of as electricity. I got to take a drink of my coffee here. So anyway, there's all types of devices out there, types of electricity, modern methods. There are two types of electricity, static electricity and current electricity. Static electricity is made of rubbing two or more objects and making friction, while current of electricity is the flow of charge across an electrical field. See, that's what the definition, when you Google that up, that's one of the first things that pops up out of there. We know how we generate electricity as far as, you know, with the electric generators and windmills and, and you know, water turbines and stuff like that, which is another type of electricity generating power sources. You know, heat, thermal energy generated from what they call fossil fuels, coal, petroleum, natural gas, solar, thermal energy, geothermal energy, nuclear energy, potential energy from falling water in a hydraulic facility, wind energy, solar electric from solar photovoltaic cells, and chemical energy from fuel cells and batteries. A question ain't never been that we could generate electricity. Electricity exists in nature, and that's not the problem. We can generate electricity by mimicking what nature actually does. The problem isn't been that we don't have enough energy. It has never been that we don't have enough electricity. It's just that we haven't learned how to use it really efficiently. That's what I hope to do with my research, is to show people that we can achieve an incredible efficiency. We can custom build generating systems that require very little input, and will put out a massive amount of power on the other side. Now, some people would try to call that over unity, but it's mincing terminology as far as I'm concerned. If you just put aside over unity, zero point, and perpetual motion, which are all like the holy grails of free electricity, and you just focus in on free energy. Energy is free. We're surrounded in it. We're in a sea of energy. There's always something going on in nature. And because of all the man-made devices that we've got out there, there are tons and tons of radio frequencies and energy waves passing through us right now as we sit here. Right now as you hear me speak, I'm sending energy out. It's going out in waves. I want you to understand mechanically how all that's working, then you can't not see free energy. But the mainstream out there would like to try to make it so that there's not possible to have free energy. They're gonna say, you know, you can't get something for nothing. You can't put nothing in and get nothing out. Anything out. You can't get more out than you put in, and so on down the line. Well, without all that craziness, electricity madness is the fact that we're generating more power than we need. We're putting massive amounts of power going out there. We know about resistance. We know about heat. And we know that if you put too much power to something, it's going to burn up. Whether you subscribe to the electron theory or not, nonetheless, it's the easiest way to explain to the average Joe, because it's what's in the school book. So, when you got all these electrons flowing, only so many of them can get through the gate at the same time. And so, whenever you're producing a massive amount of it, and they're all trying to get to the gate at the same time, sometimes the gate ain't very strong, and you'll break right through it. You get it hot and burn it up, it'll reach its thermal breakdown and fail. So, that ought to be our first clue that we might be doing something wrong. We need a lot of pressure, which would be current. There's a lot of flow, which would be current. Right now, voltage is pressure. And the more voltage, the higher the voltage you can get, the more pressure you can get. You can send electricity quickly from one place to the next. But the way that some of the, most of the appliances that have been produced these days, they're really super inefficient. And even to that extent, we're actually using more power than we need to run these individual devices. The methods of generating electricity, they say coal is 38.4% of what we use to generate electricity. Natural gas, they say, is 23.2%. Hydroelectric, they're saying 16.3%. Nuclear fusion, 10.4%, and oil, 3.7%, and non-hydro renewable, 8%. Non-hydro renewable, I guess, would be solar and wind. But either way, even when you go to look into the smallest percentage of what we actually use that aren't hydroelectric dams are pretty impressive because there's a lot of water pressure, a lot of power to water. And we can use rivers and waterfalls to turn gears and turbines and generate electricity by spinning magnets across coils and such. So it's really not as complicated as it sounds. We know there's a cause and effect for doing certain things when you're rubbing a piece of wool across a piece of plastic or something like that, and they'd say it's exchanging electrons, and more electrons are building up on one side, and then you get this electrical potential that, you know, wants to balance itself back out. So if you get it next to any kind of path to ground or conductor, anything that will conduct electricity, then it'll arc across there. It's actually a mathematical equation to tell you how far, whenever electrical spark jumps across something, how many volts that actually was. And we've noticed that we can generate static electricity in the tens of thousands of volts, if not millions of volts. Really ridiculously easy. And even when we put up radio towers and cell phone towers and different types of big towers for different purposes, because of how this world works, there's electricity in the air. And actually, every 3 feet off the ground, every meter off the ground, you get about 100 volts of electricity. And the only reason why, if a 6 foot tall man ain't getting zapped with a couple hundred volts every 5 seconds, is because he's already grounded to the earth and he's down there where, you know, it's not noticeable, but it's actually occurring. There's you're actually being shocked. It's just it's like a way a lightning rod works. It disperses. It doesn't allow that energy to build up. But in certain circumstances, if you're out on a golf course or something like that, and you're getting ready to swing that golf club, and there's a lot of static energy in the air up there, you're getting ready to have a lightning bolt, and you make a shorter path to ground. There ain't no trees around you, so you're the tallest one. And guess what? You get laid out. And goes through the golf club and then down through you, and maybe burns a hole in your shoe and blows a little dirt out of the grass or whatever. You go up and look at some videos of people getting struck by lightning. And they try to say that there ain't no such thing as free electricity, which, if you haven't paid attention in science class, that would be your first thing that would come out of your mouth. No, there ain't no such thing as free electricity. Well, I beg to differ. Done my due diligence, done my research, and I have a good understanding of what electricity actually is. But in order to try to explain to other individuals out there so that they actually understand what electricity is, I keep looking around for different types of videos that are available that have an explanation of what electricity actually is, so that the simplest term, I want the average Joe to understand in the simplest term. Not all that high-tech terminology to drive you insane, drive you completely to madness, but simple terms, like when you always hear me say that water and electricity, they have pretty much the same kind of deals going on. You can store water in containers, and that stored water has pressure involved in it. Depending on how much water you got in that thing, if you got a tank, big tank of water, and there's a hole in the bottom of that water tank, depending on how big that hole is will determine on how fast that energy can actually flow. And with a larger hole, you're going to get a lot of current flow out of there, you're going to get a lot of water gunk being able to come out at one time. But if you put a pinhole in that, you can't get a lot of current flow, but you can get a lot of pressure where that water will come up out of that tank, but it will spray out way out there in there, like a big old giant super soaker squirt gun. And so with that said, I'm going to play a couple of these little podcasts right here and give you a little bit of what the book says.
Hey there guys, Paul here from theengineeringmindset.com. In this video, we're going to be looking at how electricity works. Now this is pretty essential knowledge for any engineer, so we'll run through the basic parts of what you need to know. So let's start at the very basics, and for that we need to take a look at the atom. Everything, including you, is made from atoms. All the materials we use are made from atoms. The materials are just different because the construction of their atoms are slightly different. The atoms are made from three particles, two of which are found inside the nucleus, and the third particle sits outside this. At the center of the atom, we have the nucleus. Inside the nucleus, we have the neutrons, which have no charge, and we also have the protons, which are positively charged. The neutrons and the protons are much heavier than the electrons, so these will stay within the nucleus. Surrounding the nucleus are different layers of orbital shells. These are like flight paths for the electrons. The electrons flow along these flight paths, much like a satellite orbits our planet, except that the electrons travel at almost the speed of light. The electrons are negatively charged, and they are attracted to the positive charge of the protons. The electrons orbit around the nucleus in these orbital shells, and there are a set number of how many electrons can be in any one orbital shell. The number of protons, neutrons, and electron an atom has tells us which material it is. Atoms hold on to their electrons very tightly, but some materials will hold on to them more tightly than others. The outermost shell is known as the valence shell, and in this shell, some materials have loosely bound electrons which can flow to other atoms. Atoms which can pass electrons are called conductors, and most metals are conductors. On the other hand, atoms which do not have free electrons, and so they can't pass electrons between other atoms, are known as insulators, and these are things like glass and rubber. Now we can combine these materials to safely use electricity by having the conductor in the center, which allows electrons to move, but surround this with an insulator to restrict where they can flow to, i.e. not into us, which keeps us safe. If we look inside a slice of copper cable at the free electrons surrounding the nucleus of the copper atom, you'll see that the free electrons are able to move to other atoms, but this happens randomly in any direction. If we then connect the slice of copper cable to a closed circuit with a power source, such as a battery, then the voltage will force the electrons to move, and this will then all flow in the same direction to try and get back to the other terminal of the battery. When I say circuit, this just means the route which electrons can flow along between the two terminals, the positive and the negative, of a power source. So we can add things into their path like light bulbs, and this means that the electrons will have to pass through this in order to get to the other terminal. And so we can use this to create things such as light. The circuit can even be open or closed. In a closed circuit, that means the electrons can flow around, and in an open circuit, this means that the electrons are not able to flow. Voltage is a pushing force of electrons within a circuit. It's like pressure in a water pipe. The more pressure you have, the more water can flow. The more voltage you have, the more electrons can flow. But what does a volt mean? Well, a volt is a joule per coulomb, and a joule is a measurement of energy or work, and a coulomb is a group of flowing electrons. We'll have a look at what a coulomb is in just a second though. So a 9 volt battery can provide 9 joules of energy in the form of work or heat per group of electrons that flow from one side of the battery to the other. In this case, the current of electrons flow from one side of the battery through the LED light bulb, which produces light, and then the electrons flow to the other side of the battery. Therefore, 9 joules of light and heat is produced by the light bulb. Current is the flow of electrons. When a circuit is closed, it means electrons can flow, and when the circuit is open, no electrons will flow. We can measure the flow of electrons, just like you can measure the flow of water for a pipe. To measure the flow of electrons, we use the unit of amp. 1 amp means 1 coulomb per second, and 1 coulomb is a group of electrons. The group is incredibly large and is approximately 6,242,000,000,000,000 electrons. and that has to pass in 1 second for it to equal 1 amp. That's why electrons are grouped together and just called amps to make it easier for engineers. Resistance is a restriction to the flow of electrons in a circuit. The wire which carries the electrons will naturally have some resistance. The longer the wire, the greater the resistance. The thicker the wire, the lower the resistance. Resistance to the flow of electrons is different for each material, and the temperature of the material can also change resistance to the flow of electrons. Electrical circuits use specially designed components known as resistors to purposely restrict the flow of electrons. This is either to protect other components from too many electrons flowing through it, or it can also be used to create light and heat, such as in an incandescent light bulb. Resistance occurs when electrons collide with atoms. The amount of collisions is different from one material to another. Copper has a very low collision rate, but other materials such as iron will have much more collisions. When collisions occur, the atoms generate heat, and at a certain temperature, the material will then start to produce light as well as heat, which is how the incandescent lamps work. When a wire is wrapped in a coil, it will generate a magnetic field as the current passes through it. The cable will naturally create an electromagnetic field by itself, it's just intensified by the coil. By wrapping it in a coil, the magnetic field becomes so strong that the magnetic field starts to actually affect the electrons within the wire. But we'll look at why this occurs in a future, more advanced video. We can increase the strength of the magnetic field simply by wrapping the coils around an iron core. We can also increase the number of turns within the coils, and also we can increase the amount of current passing through the circuit. Now this is how electromagnets work, and it's also the basis of how induction motors work. If you want to learn more about induction motors, we've already covered this in another video already, just see the link on screen now. Now when a magnetic field passes across a coil of wire, it will induce a voltage in that wire caused by an induced electromotive force, which is pushing the electrons in a certain direction. If the wire is connected in a circuit, then this electromotive force will cause a current to flow. This is the basis of how AC generators work, and the electricity at your wall sockets within your home is produced in a very similar way. Transformer. Now, we can combine all of the aspects together that we've just covered, and when we do so, we'll see that we can use one coil to generate electricity, and then we can place two other coils in very close proximity to each other, but not touching, and this will create a transformer. The transformer will induce a voltage from the first or the primary coil over into the secondary coil, and this will force electrons to flow if the coil in the secondary side has a closed circuit. Now what's important about the transformer is that we can increase or decrease the voltage between the primary and the secondary coils simply by changing the amount of coils on either side. Again, this is a subject all by itself, so we'll cover this in a more advanced video later on. Now something else which I just want to briefly mention is the capacitor. So a capacitor forces positive and negative charges to separate across two plates when it is connected to a power supply. This causes a build-up or store of electrons within an electric field. When the power supply is cut or interrupted, these charges will then be released, flow up and meet again. This provides a power source but only for a few seconds until the charges have paired back up again. It's slightly similar to a battery, but capacitors are very common and they're in almost every single circuit board. We'll cover this obviously in more detail in a future video, just be aware of these. So the last part I want to cover in this video is that there are two types of current electricity, that being alternating current or AC, and then direct current or DC. Alternating current simply means that the current flows backwards and forwards in a circuit as the terminals are constantly reversed. This is a bit like the tide of the sea. It goes in and out, in and out, in and out, so it is reversing constantly. Now, alternating current is the most common source of power, and the plug sockets in your homes and your buildings and schools and workplace, etc., these will all be providing alternating current, AC. Now, on the other hand, we've got direct current, or DC, and that simply means that the current flows directly in only one direction. It does not alternate. This is what's provided from batteries, and almost all your handheld devices are from this as well. So we can convert AC to DC and vice versa using power electronics. And this is how we charge and power, you know, small devices, and it's also how solar panels can be used to power our homes, because solar panels produce DC power, and our homes need AC power. So we have to convert this for it to be usable. So both AC and DC have pros and cons to it, but you know, for sure we'll look at this in another later video. It's a bit more advanced, and there's also quite an interesting history behind why we use AC and DC and the inventors behind that. If you've got 10 minutes, I definitely recommend having a Google or a YouTube of this too. Alright, that's it for this video. Thank you very much for watching. I hope you enjoyed this and it helped you. If you have any questions, please leave me in the comment section below. Also, don't forget to subscribe and check out our website, theengineeringmindset.com.
Alright, so that's on YouTube. It's a channel called Engineering Mindset. I like the way the man explains things. It's really, he uses simple terminology. You know, a couple times in here, some words that might boggle somebody's mind, but once you get just a general understanding, and then you know it's easier. The whole key to this deal is to open your mind mechanically to see what's actually going on. The most important part of my research isn't necessarily about electricity and how to generate electricity. I want to be able to visualize in my head and be able to explain to everyone exactly what's going on mechanically in this system. You know, we use the electron theory, so when you push magnets back and forth across the coil of wire, according to the electron theory, you get a movement of those electrons where they're now flowing through, you know, changing places from atom to atom and so on down the line, and that current flow that we've got is what we call electricity. Well, I'm believing there's something a lot different going on down at a microscopic level, but until I can actually show a visual of what it is that I'm seeing mechanically happening, then the electron theory is the best way to explain what it is that is actually occurring. But if you watch nature and how nature actually does things, and how water and other things, you know, like a for example, if you got a pool of water, if there's absolutely no outside force acting on that pool of water, then you have stored energy as far as downward pressure in that pool of water. Now, if the wind starts to blow across the top of the water and that outside force interacts with that water and starts to produce waves, now you're building up more energy. You're agitating that all the molecules inside that pool. And so they're starting to slop around inside there. And at some point, if the wind's strong enough on the outside, it'll start spilling over the side. And depending on the strength of the actual wall that holds the water in the container, well, then, you know, it can withstand a lot of pressure. And it won't have anything to do. But if you got a massive wind coming by that's putting more pressure across the top of that, and the water slopping back and forth, something eventually has got to give. And those are little basic understandings that if you can see what's happening mechanically in your mind, then you know that there are certain things that, you know, there's failure points, thermal failure points, there's, whatever the material's made of, it's got a strength to it as well. Remember what the actual, it's things like tensile strength or something like that, how much until you stretch it too far and it'll actually break. In electricity generation, a generator is a device that converts motive force, mechanical energy, into electrical power for use in an external circuit. Sources of mechanical energy include steam turbines, gas turbines, water turbines, internal combustion engines, and even hand crank type generators. So we could put all these doggone devices together, and we can mimic what nature does as far as generating electricity, whether it's rubbing two things together and exchanging electrons, or whether it's, you know, turning heat into thermal electric, what's like the Seebeck effect, where for some reason if you take two dissimilar metals and you heat one end of these two metals connected together, they will generate electricity. And for some reason, depending on what type of materials these are made of, when these materials get too hot, the Seebeck effect completely stops. And so, if you keep one side cool, like in what they call a Peltier element, you keep one side cool, and the other side, there's always a temperature difference in there. As long as there's a temperature difference, you'll still continue to get the Seebeck effect. But once both of these sides of it reach the same exact temperature, for some reason the heat causes the motion to stop. No, you no longer have electricity being generated. There's no electron flow, so to speak, according to the electron theory. And so, with that said, that's another gear in the machine that if you understand how it functions and the types of materials, if you keep the electrical wire cool, then it will allow that that energy to flow without all this resistance. But when it gets hotter, the hotter it gets, the more resistance it meets. And then eventually something's got to fail, whether it be the insulation on the wire or the actual wire itself gets too hot and burns in half. Most generally, it's the insulation that burns off first. And when the insulation burns off, then your wires are short out, and now that doubles the resistance on that, because instead of 1,000 turns of wire, now you're down to 1 turn of wire because everything's shorted itself out. So I'm going to play a second one of these from the same YouTube channel. If you get a chance to go over there and subscribe to this individual, if you want somebody who could maybe explain it better than I do. I'm trying to explain it as easy as possible, but sometimes it's hard.
Hey there guys, Paul here from theengineeringmindset.com. In this video, we're going to be discussing voltage. We'll learn what is voltage and potential difference, how to measure voltage, the difference between direct and alternating voltage as well as current, and finally, we'll briefly look at why and how voltages vary around the world. In our last video, we learned that electricity is the flow of free electrons between atoms. Voltage is what pushes the free electrons around a circuit. Without voltage, the free electrons will move around between atoms, but they move around randomly, so they aren't much use to us. It's only when we apply a voltage to a circuit that the free electrons will all move in the same direction, causing current. It's easy to imagine voltage like pressure in a water pipe. If we have a water tank completely filled with water, then the mass of all that water is going to cause a huge amount of pressure at the end of the pipe. If we have a water tank that's only partly filled, then there will be much less pressure in the pipe. If we open the valve to let the water flow, then more water will flow at a faster rate from the high pressure tank compared to the low pressure tank. The same with electricity. The more voltage we have, then the more current can flow. Voltage can exist without current. For example, we can measure the pressure in the pipe with the valve shut with no water flowing, and from this we can tell that the pipe is pressurized. What we're really measuring is the pressure difference between what's inside the pipe compared to the pressure outside. The same thing if we have a battery connected to a circuit with an open switch. The voltage is still present, we can measure that, and as soon as the switch closes, it's going to push the free electrons around the circuit. We sometimes hear voltage referred to as potential difference. This really means how much work can potentially be done by a circuit. Coming back to our water analogy, if we have two lakes at the same level, then there is no potential to do work because the water isn't flowing. But if we raise one lake higher than the other, then this higher lake now has the potential to flow down to the second one. And if we give it a path, then it will flow. If we place a turbine in its path, then we can use its energy to power a light or even an entire town. Back to the electrical circuit. This battery has a potential difference of 1.5 volts between its negative and positive terminal. If we connect a piece of wire to both terminals of a battery, then the pressure of the battery will force electrons to flow all in the same direction along the same path. We can then place electrical components in the path of these electrons to do work for us. For example, if we place a lamp into the circuit, then this will light up as the electrons flow through it. If we then added another battery to the circuit in series, then the electrons will effectively be boosted by the second battery because they can only flow along this path and there is more energy being added. This will combine the voltages so we get 3 volts. More volts equals more pressure, which means more pushing force. That will mean more electrons will flow and the lamp will glow brighter. However, if we were to move the battery and connect it in parallel, then the path of the electrons splits. Some will flow to the first battery and some will flow to the second battery. Therefore, the batteries will both provide the same amount of energy, so the voltage isn't combined. The voltage isn't boosted and we only get 1.5 volts. So the workload is split by the batteries and the lamp will be powered for longer, but it will be dimmer. We'll cover this in much more detail within our electrical circuit series. Do check that out, links are in the video description below. We measure the potential difference of voltage with the units of volts, and we use the symbol of a capital V to show this. If you look on your electrical appliances, you will see a number next to a capital V indicating how many volts the product is designed for. In this example, the manufacturers of this USB hard drive are telling us that the device needs to be connected to a 5 volt DC or direct current supply, and it needs 1 amp of current for the device to work. The term volt comes from an Italian physicist named Alessandro Volta, who invented the voltaic pile, which was the first electrical battery that could provide an electrical current in a steady rate in a circuit. Voltage and volts are different. Remember, voltage is the pressure and volts is just the units we use to measure it in. The same as we know the pipe has pressure, but we use units to measure this pressure, such as bar, PSI, KPA, etc. As we saw earlier, we can measure volts with a voltmeter. This can be separate or part of a multimeter. If you don't have a multimeter yet, you can pick one of these up really cheaply. I highly encourage you to have one in your toolkit. I'll leave a link in the video description down below for where to get one for a good price. To measure voltage, we have to connect to the circuit in parallel across the 2 points we would like to know the voltage or potential difference for. So for a single battery in a circuit, then we measure 1.5 volts across the battery, and we also measure 1.5 volts across the lamp. The battery is providing 1.5 volts to the lamp, and the lamp uses 1.5 volts to produce light and heat. In a 2-lamp series circuit, we measure 1.5 volts across the battery, 1.5 volts across the 2 lamps combined, but 0.75 volts across the lamps individually. The voltage or potential has been shared between the lamps to both provide light and heat. The lamps are dimmer because the voltage has been shared or divided. Again, we'll cover this in more detail in our electrical circuits tutorials. So we saw earlier that voltage and volts are different. Voltage is pressure and volts is the unit of measurement. So what does 1 volt mean? 1 volt is required to drive 1 coulomb or approximately 6,242,000,000,000,000 electrons through a resistance of 1 ohm in 1 second. That's still a little confusing, so another way to explain this is that to power this 1.5 watt lamp with a 1.5 volt battery would require 1 coulomb or 6,242,000,000,000,000 electrons to flow from the battery and through the lamp every second for it to stay on. To power this 0.3 watt lamp with a 1.5 volt battery would require 0.2 coulombs, or approximately 1,872,600,000,000,000,000 electrons to flow from the battery and through the lamp every second for it to stay on. If we try to use a lower voltage, the lamp would turn on, but it decreases in brightness as the voltage decreases. That's because there is less pressure to force electrons through it. Less electrons flowing, less light that can be produced. The lamps are only rated for a certain voltage and current. If we use a higher voltage, then the lamp will become brighter because more electrons are flowing through it. But if we add too much voltage and current, then the lamp will blow because too many electrons try to pass through at once. If we look at some typical batteries, we can see that this AA battery has a voltage of 1.5 volts, and this one has a voltage of 9 volts. These are sources of direct voltage, meaning the pressure it provides moves the electrons in a constant current in one direction, much like the flow of water down a river. We cover this in our last video on electricity basics, so do check that out if you haven't already. Links are in the video description below. Direct voltage is usually represented with a capital V with some dots above this and a small horizontal line. You can see an example of this on the multimeter for the setting we would need in order to measure the voltage in a DC supply. If we plotted this voltage against time, it would produce a straight line because it is constant. It is direct in one direction. The voltage in our wall sockets is alternating voltage. This is a different type of electricity. In this type, the electrons alternate between flowing forwards and backwards because the polarity of the circuit is changing, much like the tide of the sea. If we plotted this voltage against time, we would get a sine wave as it moves forwards and rises to its maximum and then starts to decline. It passes through zero, and now the current is flowing backwards, but it then hits its minimum and reverses direction again. This is usually represented with a capital V with a wave line above it. You can see that on the multimeter here, also for measuring AC voltage. The voltage at these sockets varies depending on where in the world we are. The majority of the world uses 220 to 240 volts, but North, Central and some of South America, as well as a few countries scattered across the planet, will use 110 to 127 volts. We can measure the voltage at our sockets and see that it actually changes slightly throughout the day as the demand on the electricity network varies. And we can do that using one of these cheap energy meters. Again, links in the video description down below if you want one of these. You can pick them up fairly cheaply and they're a great device for your toolbox. The reason for different voltages around the world goes all the way back to the beginning when electricity first started being distributed. At first, there was no standardization, so each distribution network had its own voltage and frequency for whatever their engineers felt was best. Eventually, over time, some companies grew and dominated the market, and so voltage and frequency standardized as their products and services expanded. Governments also had to step in and pass laws and regulations to help standardize their countries so that people could buy products easily, but also trade products with other countries. This is still a problem to this day, but it's pretty much too late to fix as everyone is now so reliant on their electrical devices, and we would need to replace or modify them all to solve the problem. For example, if we take a hairdryer from the US, which is rated at 110 volts, and we plug it into a wall socket in Europe which has 220 volts, the hairdryer will burn out at full power because there is just simply too much voltage or too much pressure and the device just can't cope. If we took a hairdryer from Europe and plugged it into a US socket, it probably won't turn on, but if it does, it's not going to be very strong, it's going to be pretty weak because there just isn't enough pressure for it to function. Some products can be used in different voltages though. You need to check the manufacturer's labels on the product to first see if the product has been designed to cope with different voltages. For example, this laptop charger shows that it can be used on voltages between 100 and 240 volts, whereas this charger is only rated for 220 volts or 240 volts. Okay guys, that's it for this video, but if you want to continue your learning with your electrical engineering, then check out these videos here and I'll catch you there for the next lesson. Leave your questions in the comment section down below and don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, as well as theengineeringmindset.com. Once again, thanks for watching.
Yeah, once again, that guy does a pretty good way of explaining it. I found a video here. I also posted a link to an article that has to do with, they say, a new device that... a new device can generate electricity anywhere using natural changes. Basically temperature changes, natural temperature changes. But the thing about this particular article, even though they claim it's a new device, it's not really a new device. We got thermocouples, thermal piles, Peltier elements, all of which use a temperature difference in order to generate electricity. And so just about anywhere on Earth you can find a temperature difference. There's a direct sunlight as opposed to shade. There's a temperature difference. Direct sunlight as opposed to, you know, the water or whatever. There's a temperature difference. You can even, you know, intentionally create a temperature difference. You know, ice on one side and heat on the other side. And that Seebeck effect will actually work. So, what the common denominator is right there is that without any moving parts per se, you actually have a way to generate electricity. You know, actually, if you go by the electron theory, there's always something going on, even with a photovoltaic cell, the way that the light comes down and it energizes the fuel or the materials inside there. It either produces a temperature difference of some sort that gets the Seebeck effect going, or it causes a chemical reaction in there that basically causes electricity to flow. But either way, if you take a Peltier element, you can actually measure this for yourself. It's a little square, looks like ceramic wafer kind of thing. And you put heat on one side and you put cold on the other side and you'll see electricity. You have the thermal couple that's in your thermostat, that's in your doggone electrical system in your heater in your house. It has a when the pilot light's heating that thing up, or the temperature inside the stove is heating it up, it produces enough electricity to send a little electrical charge out to the deal to tell it to turn it on or off, or vice versa. There's all different types of thermoelectric devices out there, but nonetheless, using heat from the ground and cold air from the shade or whatever, there's many ways to generate thermoelectricity. And depending on how you're doing this and how you're storing it will determine on how, how good of an outcome you're going to get. Because like the guy was saying, there's two different types of electricity just between the AC current in the U.S. as opposed to the AC current over in Europe and places like that. You have 50 hertz at 220 on one side, 60 hertz at 120 on the other side. And so these devices that you buy, might have a different rating. Some of the things that we have here may not work over there unless you have some sort of an adapter to either ramp the voltage up or lower the voltage down, some sort of resistance. But either way, whenever you're talking about all that, there's a lot more power coming out of those AC wall sockets than people realize. And when you're using AC current and that power is just constantly coming in, it doesn't stop just because you plug something in. It'll go in, it'll meet resistance, the device will use whatever it can, and in the process of how it's actually functioning, it'll generate its own heat from that resistance. The wiring that the energy is traveling across will generate its own heat from its resistance. And the outlet itself, all that heat energy is being transferred back and forth between the device and the wall outlet and the wiring, and eventually too much power through there and something's got to give. So for safety purposes, we put breaker switches or fuses in between there, so that if the power gets too high and the temperature on the wiring gets too high, that it will break the circuit and stop the flow of energy, and so you don't end up burning your house down or setting fire to your car electrical system. There's an actual book out there called Secrets of the Alternator that shows you how to take a regular AC Delco alternator and take the diodes out of it, and you can generate 120 volts AC. Actually, you can generate a lot more depending on how fast you actually turn that, because that spinning around really fast raises that frequency range up higher. So now instead of producing a high current, you're up in the high voltage section. That's where I like to be, in the high voltage portion. But we'll get to in a minute. I'm going to try this one video. I haven't really listened to this one particular one yet, but this is a little bit of a thermoelectric video. See how they explain it.
Drawing out the facts, the Naked Science Scrapbook. Hello and welcome to the Naked Science Scrapbook from the Naked Scientists. This time we're answering the question, how do thermoelectric generators work? Scary as it sounds, about two-thirds of the energy generated by a conventional power station is actually lost in the form of waste heat that escapes up a cooling tower. Part of the problem is that the gas or steam-powered turbine systems that we use to produce most of our electricity work by first burning a fuel to produce heat energy, then converting the heat energy into mechanical energy in the turbine, then turning the mechanical energy into electrical energy in a generator. And because this process is intrinsically wasteful, only about a third of the energy unleashed from the fuel actually ends up in the wire leaving the power station. But if we could mop up the wasted heat and convert it into usable electricity, this would make the power generation much more efficient, and this in turn would be better for the environment, because we need to burn less fuel and produce less carbon dioxide. This is where thermoelectric generators, or TEGs, come in. These are devices that can convert heat energy directly into electrical energy without any need for moving parts like turbines. Thermoelectric generators work by exploiting a temperature gradient between the two sides of the generator. Think of it like this. If you take a piece of metal, heat one end and simultaneously cool the other, the electrons surrounding the metal atoms at the hot end will have more energy than the equivalent electrons at the cooler end. This means the hot electrons will be jiggling around faster than those at the cool end, so they'll tend to move towards the cold end faster than the cold electrons will move towards the hot end. Eventually, the cold end will become more negatively charged and the hot end will become positively charged. This phenomenon, where a temperature difference can create a voltage, is known as the thermoelectric effect, and it was first described as long ago as the 1820s by a German physicist called Thomas Johann Seebeck. So it sounds simple, but one big problem is that the voltage produced is absolutely tiny. And this can't just be solved by connecting lots of pieces of metal together in series, like you would to make a bigger battery, because the wires used to connect them, which are also pieces of metal, will produce a voltage in the wrong direction and oppose the voltages in the pieces of metal. The way that scientists have solved this problem is to use a material that can conduct electricity using positively charged particles rather than electrons. And just like the electrons in the metal, the positively charged particles will move away from the hot side. So now if you link a chain of them together, the voltages will add up along the series, allowing you to generate a useful amount of power. Materials with this type of positive conducting property are called semiconductors. And in fact, rather than heating pieces of metal to create the current, another type of semiconductor material, which conducts using electrons and is a much more efficient generator, is used instead, sandwiched between the two positive conducting semiconductors. Another problem with thermoelectric devices is that the types of materials that allow electrons to flow easily, so you can tap off the electricity, also tend to be very good at conducting heat. So very quickly the temperature gradient driving the process is lost and the efficiency falls. To get around this, scientists are trying to find materials with a high electrical conductivity but a low thermal conductivity. One way to achieve this is to use certain metal alloys, which can be used to form a lattice of different sized atoms that slow down the flow of heat while allowing electrons to move freely. And in the same way, certain arrangements of nanoparticles can trap heat and slow it down. In general, the more joins or interfaces there are between the particles, the slower heat is able to move. Right now, TEGs produced using these technologies are only about 10% efficient at best, but in industries on the scale of a power station, even at this early stage, this could still contribute a huge fuel saving. Another area that might soon benefit from the use of this technology is the auto industry. Just like a power plant, over 70% of the energy locked up in the fuel you put in your car exits along the exhaust pipe as wasted heat. As a result, a number of car manufacturers are now testing prototype TEGs that can scavenge back some of this wasted heat from the exhaust and use it to run things like the air conditioning unit and the lights, and to charge the batteries in hybrid vehicles. Industry experts are predicting that we'll see the first mainstream TEG-equipped cars as soon as 2017. But there's one place where TEGs are already proving their worth: space exploration. And particularly aboard probes going so far away that solar power isn't an option. Space provides an excellent working environment for TEGs, because the average temperature in space is just 3 degrees above absolute zero, which takes care of the cold side of the generator very nicely. Meanwhile, the hot side is provided by a radioactive source such as strontium-90, which produces heat as it decays. This type of radioisotope thermoelectric generator was used in the Apollo missions and is currently powering the Cassini and Voyager spacecraft missions millions of miles from home. That's it for this time. To get the answers to more science questions, join us online at thenakedscientist.com/scrapbook. Bye!
So, basically, whenever you generate heat, that's what they use to boil water and turn water into steam. And they use that steam pressure then to turn turbines that turn generator heads that have permanent magnet systems in them and coils of wire that spins those magnets across the coils and then produces an electric flow. And when you heard the lady talk at the end there about how you could take, as long as you have a temperature difference, like the how cold it is in space as opposed to the energy being depleted from the radioactive material, which is causing, you know, things to get hot, well, you got that those two extreme temperature differences and you're able to produce electricity. They say they sent a probe all the way to Pluto that produced over 200 watts of power when it got there after 9 years of being in space. And so somebody has to tell me, if there ain't no such thing as free energy, how long does it have to work before you can classify it as free energy? And Stephen posted a link inside the chat room down there about let me get over there to look at this thing again. Sorry. Where'd it go? I'll just have to open it up again. Didn't want to open it there. Sorry. I get the doggone title right on it. I've seen this video before, but it's dealing with anti-gravity and the method that this guy, I can't even pronounce it, Chikurkov or something like that, electromagnetic field lift. It's pretty interesting, and it's another one of the points that I was making about once you understand the mechanics of what's actually going on, that you can generate electricity in a magnetic field going in a couple opposite directions, and you'll get a counter force that makes something lighter, basically being able to hover. And it's pretty impressive, this little device that he's got going on. And also in another video that I posted on there, you can see where static electricity pretty much does the same exact thing because of the polarity of the charges, one being negative and the other one being negative as well, or vice versa. Opposite charges seem to attract, and positive charges seem to repel of one another. But the link is posted over there in the Super chat room if you want to see the video that Stephen posted. I saw it's pretty impressive how the guy shows this thing just apparently floating, you know, when he connects the power to it in whatever frequency range that he's actually generating the magnetic field. But all of it's the same exact energy. You know, when you try to say that to people, they don't seem to grasp it. I'm going to play a bit of this this other podcast here. This is a long one. It's like an hour and something, but I'm not going to play the whole thing. I'm just going to play it and start it and stop it a couple different places.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and small woodland animals, my name is Marty Jobson, and this is a talk all about the most spectacular of the natural forces of the world. This is a talk all about electricity. This is a talk that aims to put the awesome back into electricity, or as I like to put it, the awesomosity, which is a word I coined especially for this talk. The awesomosity back into electricity, but it's also a talk that poses a question. The question is this: have we tamed electricity? Is electricity ours to do with what we will? It's a rhetorical question, young man. We will come to the answer at the end. But I like your enthusiasm. So yes, have we tamed electricity? I'm going to talk about this for a little while, and then hopefully we'll have an answer at the end. But first of all, I have to acknowledge where I am. I have to acknowledge where I am standing, because this is where it starts. This is the motherland. This is the heart and soul of science communication, as far as I'm concerned, because of the people that worked here. This is the desk. This is the lecture theatre. Here, we're in the heart of it all, science communication. And where some of the discoveries I'm going to be talking about actually took place, in this very building. So, Electricity. What can we know about electricity? Right, well, first of all, electricity's all around us. These lights up here, all of these lights up here are there, and the only reason you can see me is because of electricity. The only reason you can see my slides is because there's somewhere up there, I can't see it because the lights are in my eyes, is a projector which is projecting onto the screen. The only reason you can hear me is because on my bottom I have a battery pack projecting up to Tom up there. And I've got in my pocket, we've all got in our pockets, electricity. We've all got these devices, they're all powered by electricity, they're all connected through electricity and the electromagnetic radiation. And in fact, what I'm going to do is... Oh, it's just gone to sleep. Typical. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a picture of my lovely audiences. I'm going to go, Tom, can we bring the lights up so we can see the audience? And we're going to tweet this picture. So if you don't want to be in the picture, you have to close your eyes. So I'm going to take a picture that way, and when I take the picture, you all go... like that, okay, because that's what you have to do when you're being tweeted. So are you ready? 3, 2, 1. Yeah! Not you lot, because you're not in this one. Oh, I'll just tweet it. So that's now gone out into the ether through the power of electricity. It's disappeared off. So where does electricity begin? What is the beginning of the story of electricity? The beginning of the story of electricity goes back to this bloke, Thales of Miletus. Thales of Miletus was an ancient Greek, an ancient Greek. Look at his dates, 600 BC, so over 2,500 years ago. Now, Thales of Miletus discovered something. He discovered that if you take a piece of amber, which is fossilised tree resin, people have probably got it in jewellery. There's probably some amber in this room as we speak, but he had a big lump of it, presumably, and he discovered that if you take a piece of amber and you rub it on a cat, something rather peculiar happens. Well, in fact, two things happen. The first thing that happens is the cat becomes considerably annoyed. Meow! Tracing the cat around. The second thing that happens, though, is that the cat's fur stands on end. Now, I mean, clearly it stands on end because it's annoyed, but more than that, the fur is attracted to the lump of amber. It's literally pulled towards the amber. And he thought this was very peculiar. And you have to wonder about Thales of Miletus. You really have to think, why did he do this? Because presumably, okay, so he finds a piece of amber and he thinks, oh, this is very exciting and interesting. And then he starts thinking, well, should we rub it on the desk? No. Rub it on the wall? Rub it on a goat? Cat. Yeah, cat. And he rubs it on the cat, but, you know, why cats? I don't know. I worry about these things. Now, fortunately for us, we don't need amber or cats because, never work with animals and children is absolutely true. So instead of amber, we can use this. This is a piece of polypropylene pipe, 3/4 inch waste overflow pipe from B&Q, to be precise. And this is a piece of fake fur. Okay, you do not need cats, which actually turns out to be quite important. So what you do is you rub one against the other. And this is what Thales of Miletus did. He took his amber, he rubbed it on the cat. And you rub one against the other. And if I hold this close to my microphone, which is here, without getting my moustache, can you hear the little click, 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 clicks? That is static electricity forming on this rod, this polypropylene rod. Now, what Thales of Miletus had no concept about, he thought it was something to do with cats. What he didn't realise was that what was happening is that there were these things called electrons. Electrons, subatomic particles, they're everywhere. They're in all of us, they're in the floor, they're in the walls, they're in the ceiling. Everything is full of subatomic particles, and some of these subatomic particles are called electrons. Now, what happens when you rub this polypropylene rod on the piece of fake fur is some of the electrons in the fake fur are transferred to the rod. They rub off, quite literally, they are pulled off the fake fur onto the rod. So they build up on the rod, okay? And they sit there because the rod is made of plastic, and plastic is a non-conductor. So they don't move, so they are static, which is why we call it static electricity. Static electricity meaning the electricity does not move. That's what it comes from. So now, if Thales of Miletus had been able to do this, he most certainly would have performed this experiment. Unfortunately, the cats got in the way somehow. So what we're going to do is, I need to put that just there. And I've got here a piece of space blanket, Mylar film, okay? It's a very thin piece of space blanket. And I'm going to charge up this piece of polypropylene, like this. Get it charged. Pop that down, discharge my hand, pick that up, drop this, and get it off my finger. Ooh. Nearly. I have to start that again. Bear with me. Oh, everything's falling off. Tip Right, here we go. Once more, with feeling. Pick that up. That's important for later. We'll try that again. So, charge up. Put down. Discharge. Pick up. And this time... Cool! Cool! Yes, it is cool indeed! What on earth is happening? So, what's happening is that space blanket is actually made of a very thin sheet of aluminium coated onto plastic. And the plastic coating is irrelevant, but what's happening is when you drop it onto the wand, some of those electrons sitting static on the wand jump onto the metal. Now, because like charges repel, electrons really don't like each other, okay? They are pushed away from the rod. So it's pushed away because there is electrons on it. And I can drop it. And pick it up. And then you drive it back up. Oop. Takes a little bit of practice. And you can make these. They're just literally, it's just a piece of mylar space blanket, carefully sliced. And then to you, to me. Now, Thales and Miletus most certainly would have done this. And it is traditional that if you applaud a demonstration, it's more likely to work. Ah, yes! It's almost as if I didn't have to ask. Oh. Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Oh, there we go. Oh. It's too breezy in here. I'll put that down. So...
Alright, so the demonstration he just did is he took a piece of PVC pipe and a little strip of mylar, basically like almost Christmas tinsel kind of stuff, because it's got a little aluminum on there and some of the electrons or the energy from rubbing that fur across there is stored, and because of the types of charges it actually floats, and it's pretty interesting to watch. You know, it's basically like anti-gravitation technology. So if you get an opportunity to go over and watch that video, it's well worth watching. It's a pretty lengthy video. I'll play a little bit more of it here in case you was interested in it.
We have the beginnings of static electricity with Thales of Miletus. And the thing is, though, nothing really happens for... not just decades, not just centuries, but millennia. For thousands of years, nothing happens really in the history of science as far as electricity is concerned. And I should point out that the reason it's called electricity is from the Greek for amber, which is electros. It all comes together. So not much happens. Possibly because of the cat thing, which was confusing. More likely because actually making static electricity, as you can see, you rub it, you get a little bit of static. But actually making a decent amount of static electricity turns out to be quite difficult. And it wasn't until a chap came along called Otto von Guericke, who's one of my heroes, but we won't go into him really. He comes along, he invents a machine to make static electricity. And it becomes very popular. And what develops out of this are these things called electrical soirees. So... what we have here is a picture of an electrical soiree, and what you have on the right-hand side is you have the electrician. The electrician who has placed his hands upon what's known as a Hawkesby device, which was a slightly later development of the Otto von Guericke's static electricity machine, and it makes static electricity. And what it does is it rotates, okay, and there's, you see there's a big wheel over here, and there's a man behind it cranking the wheel. That turns the glass ball. The electrician has his hands. Now, you should note here that the electrician is not called Bob and has his trousers down here. This is a very genteel man. He's even got a sword, of all things, by the looks of it. Very posh. Because electrical soirees were the entertainment of the well-to-do. They were the entertainment of the upper crust. Okay? And this is because nobody really knew what to do with electricity. It was a bit of fun. And the upper crust were the only people who could afford electricians and who could afford, well, quite frankly, anything to do with having fun in those days. So they're all standing around. You can see the guys on the left-hand side there, that's of the upper crust. They're saying, oh, that's a jolly do. And drinking cups of tea and maybe fine port wine or something like that.
It's crazy when you think about it. Back in those days, electricians were like magicians. And they... it was a form of entertainment for people. And now when we talk about electricity, we're thinking more like how much our power bill is going to cost, or electric cars, or even electric airplanes for that matter. what we can do with it, because, you know, at some point we figured out we could actually get physical work done with it. We could actually use electricity to turn compressors that would heat up gas, and then use that physics of that gas being hot, and then allowing that gas to rapidly expand into a condenser to produce cold. And so heat and cold and electricity, all of these things, even when you're talking about nuclear power, coal-fired power plants, or oil power plants, when I said about the types of electrical generation, coal was like 38.4% of what we use to generate electricity, and natural gas 23.2%, hydroelectric 16.3%, nuclear fission 10.4%. So there's only like 10.4% of nuclear power plants out there. Oil was only 3.7%, and non-hydro renewables such as wind turbines, windmills, and solar are only 8%. So not that we don't have enough energy. You can listen to whenever they talk about how when energy is being generated, that the majority of it is lost in heat. And so since heat is a form of energy, it can be stored. You can store heat energy in different types of materials. When something's hot, there's a lot going on down at a microscopic level. There's a lot of energetic things that are occurring right down there. And that heat wants to basically balance itself out. You know, it wants to cool down. You know, things don't like to be hot. And if you understand how the mechanics of that heat is actually functioning, then you can get, that waste energy to actually do work as well. So if you think about this thing here for a second, if you're running an internal combustion engine and that thing's only 20-30% efficient, you have to ask, where is that extra fuel going? What's going out the exhaust? And the heat energy that is generated by the actual burning of the fuel to begin with, and the vibration of the engine and the friction of the bearings and all that, is generating yet even more heat. And so there's a massive, if you ever wanted a good way to explain over unity, then explain the internal combustion engine, because you're putting out a massive amount of heat. And the longer you run it, the hotter it gets, and eventually if you don't have the proper lubrications and proper cooling, that heat energy, that engine will flat out destroy itself. It will tear itself apart. Yeah, all these parts will reach their thermal breakdown point and then they will fail. So that leaves room for proper engineering to re-engineer all these things to take in consideration. We know certain effects are going to cause heat, and so we don't want that heat to reach a certain point because it'll start making our parts fail. And so we can guide that energy and turn that energy into useful energy and make that thing extremely efficient. So heat is the biggest loss of all these different ways that we're using energy, whether it be the electricity coming out of your wall in between the wall outlet and the wiring and the actual device you're trying to run at the same time. If you can keep something from ever reaching its thermal breakdown, then you won't have to worry about it failing. So if we start to use energy properly, which is the reason why you're always hearing me talk about voltage, high voltage, voltage, voltage. I don't want current watts and amps. I don't care about current watts and amps. Those current watts and amps will have their place when it gets to the part on the other side where it takes a certain amount of current watts and amps to run certain things, but even to that extent, you're still putting more power to these devices than need to be to those devices. And it ends up that you are energy inefficient because you're generating heat via the resistance. And so if you take that, guide that energy away from the system, such as something as simple as putting a capacitor in between a load, you're going to make it more efficient for as long as that capacitor has storage space. Once the storage space is completely filled up, then you're back to square one again, and so now you have to add another capacitor to add yet even more storage space. At some point, you'll find a sweet spot to where the capacitors can never be completely filled up because you're not pushing enough power forward in order to do that. However, you'll still have enough energy to actually run the load that you want to run. And so that gives you extra power inside there, that if you wanted to decrease the number amount of capacitors but send some of that power over to the next load in line, then now that shared energy amongst the two different devices can be equalized out, and neither one of these are actually getting hot, with the exception of any possible friction in bearings due to, you know, whatever, you know, types of lubrication that you don't have. You know, there's a certain viscosity to different types of oils and greases, and that's basically just the thickness. You know, it's the difference between how syrup pours as opposed to how water pours. The thinner it is, the easier it obviously is to pour. And so we put like really thick gear lube inside of the transmissions or differentials in the back of vehicles, so that because they're going to be generating a lot of friction because of the weight that's on this vehicle, and you need to be able to take away that heat as fast as possible so that those gears don't get too hot and then either fracture or whatever and then eventually fail. If you could keep that rear end from ever getting hot, and you're not abusing it by smashing on the gas and hammering and breaking those, physically breaking the gears, as opposed to, you know, getting them hot and then they get weak and then fail, then that rear end in that vehicle will never fail. Everything has to reach its thermal breakdown before it fails. And so if you understand the simplicity of what's actually occurring in how we're actually using electricity, then you know that you can actually guide this power to where you want to equally distribute it out, so that you're not meeting that resistance that is causing the failure in your devices. We have the tools and the technology to quite literally design and develop a perfectly engineered machinery that will not fail. And even to the extent of you're using a coal-fired power plant, when you talk about renewable energies, coal-fired power plant is a renewable energy source. Regardless of what people try to tell you, when you burn coal, you'll get soot build up inside the doggone stack of there. When you burn firewood, you'll get soot built up in the stack of your chimney of your stove. That is another type of fuel. You know, they call it creosote that builds up inside your chimney. You have to buy these specific logs that go in there and basically make the creosote non-flammable anymore. Otherwise, this stuff is like, it's almost like sticky tar, and it gets baked on into the inside of your chimney. And the more you burn firewood, the more of it builds up inside the chimney, and eventually it will, you know, plug up the chimney. And you could potentially end up with a wire or a chimney fire. And so, in order to keep that, every so often you clean the chimney out. But that stuff that's coming out of there is still flammable. It's still fuel. So you, in order to burn the firewood, you actually produced another energy source out the other end. And if you understood how that was actually occurring, you could develop systems that would take that wood ash and recycle it into more energy sources, so it's still renewable. Plus, the majority of the heat that's actually wasted out of the chimney, then you know that you could actually guide that energy around to do other things. You could guide the chimney down and through a system that would gather up that heat and store that heat energy. So it isn't that we don't have the technology available to make perfectly engineered machines. It's just that when they got to a certain point, you build a coal-fired power plant, you build a nuclear power plant, you build a diesel-fired plant, whatever type of internal combustion engine or whatever that you're putting together, that it's going to generate heat. It's going to have heat losses because you're burning the fuel. But when you get to that amount of energy that's pushed out of there, hey, there you go. You can sell it. All right, you sell that energy regardless of all the losses in the system, regardless of the lack of efficiency. You sell that electricity. So they found their happy medium already. They're always going to be able to sell you electricity, and then they'll be able to use the fact that this supposed fossil fuel or this supposed coal is hard to come by. It's got a scarcity to it, so they can charge you more every year, raise your bill up, because it's harder to get oil, it's harder to get coal or whatever. And so every year your electric bill keeps continuously going up, when in fact they don't use near as much amount of energy as they claim they're using in order to produce it. They're using the same amount they were using back then, but charging you double or triple the price now. And so the people of the world are being ripped off. Hand over fist, you're being ripped off like you wouldn't believe. Because if they was wanting to really seriously get to an energy independence, we could have been there so long ago that it's ridiculous. You know, Tesla showed us ways to use electricity to where now we have cell phones, we have wireless towers, we have wireless charging systems and all that. And if we, the people, ever decided we wanted to get our act together and have free energy, we could have it. We could have it tomorrow. You know, it's just a matter of whether or not you want to pool your resources with my resources, and we all get together and take all this information and put those pieces of the puzzle together. We could have that. You know, free energy already exists. It's already been proven ad nauseum. It's time and time and time again. Example after example, free energy has been proven. You're going to have people out there on YouTube and other platforms out there that's going to say, oh no, there's crackpots out there that say we're floating in the sea of energy, but it's not usable energy and blah, blah. They're going to continue to keep on doing that. Basically, they're promoting their own slavery, because they still got to go over and pull the switch on the light socket so they can turn their lights on, and they're paying the man. And if they want to continue to pay the man, they can continue to try to debunk free energy and continue to give everybody a rash and discourage alternative energy researchers from doing any work. I sent message after message out to senators and congressmen and everywhere I could possibly say, look, there's a better way. We can do this. We can do this. We already got what you're asking for. We already got what you're asking for. And I continuously get ignored. I don't know what I could do. That's why I said the hardest part isn't the fact that we can generate electricity. We can generate millions of volts of electricity. But people don't understand how simple it is to use that energy. I'm trying to show that part of it. But, you know, I get to the point where I get so frustrated, I'm ready to walk away, and I don't do YouTube videos as much, and I probably ain't got no videos left on Twitch because they erase them every 14 days, and I need to get on there and make a video on YouTube, and I need to make a video on Twitch, do a live stream on YouTube and Twitch. But like I said, I get so aggravated that, you know, the people that want to listen to the deal, they got good intentions. But the trolls and the rest of the system, you get to the point where you feel like you're wasting your time. Nobody's wanting to take this mainstream. It's going to take a massive movement of the average people out there to get fed up with their electric bills and try to do something about it. We got the technology to do it. Now, the technology, as far as buying materials and stuff like that, you know, one man just can't do it by himself. I can build what I can build with what I can afford, and I can try to show everybody out there and hope that people run with these ideas. But the system out there is already set in their ways. They're not going to change. The fuel industry is going to continue to work like it does. It's going to continue to raise prices on you. And they'll come out there and say, oh, well, we're going to regulate them because they're cheating people on fuel prices or whatever, monopolizing the energy industry, when in fact they're all in bed together. They don't care. They don't care about you. They don't care the fact. They just want to, when the people start to get mad because the fuel prices are going up, they come out and try to act like they're the nice guys of the bunch and they're going to fix it, right? Well, the fact is, that's wrong. They're not. They're not going to fix it. Because they're all making money. They're making taxes. There's a reason why they call it the petrol dollar instead of being backed by gold anymore. So, what you see is the standard right now isn't going to change until something drastic occurs. And the drastic that needs to occur is the average Joe needs to start supporting their researchers and trying to, you know, encourage the outside the box thinking, what the school book doesn't say. I don't care what the school book says. And that makes a lot of people mad, because whenever I'm trying to explain something to them and they're trying to argue with me over terminology as opposed to trying to see it from my eyes and what I'm trying to tell them, they get mad. Oh no, that's not how it works. That's not how plasma works. That's not how this works, or whatever. Look, I don't care what you think. I don't care what the school book thinks. Alright? I'm telling you from what I'm witnessing, what I'm seeing mechanically, and if we took and put this piece with that piece right there, we're going to get this result. In the heart of plasma, it's hot. There's a lot of heat going on there. It's very energetic inside of plasma. So with that said, when you understand how electromagnetic waves are working according to what the book says, when you understand how electricity is actually flowing, and when you understand resistance and heat and temperature differences and all that, you got all the information needed to take all these pieces of the puzzle. If you want to generate heat on purpose to use that for a specific power source, you know that you can do it. If you're generating heat and you're not wanting the heat, you know that energy can not only be guided away from it, but it could be stored and turned into other forms of energy. According to science, energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed, so where does it go? It's just moving around from place to place. We rub two things together and the friction generates heat and it generates static electricity, so we know this. All right, and there are certain materials, and because of the atmosphere around there, if you're rubbing that cloth onto that doggone piece of PVC and then being able to move that piece of mylar floated around in the sky like that, then, you know, there's a lot of things that just happen. You made that doggone PVC a little bit warmer because you got the molecules from that friction excited and everything. Plus, you actually added extra electrons according to the electron theory, which now it has extra stored energy on it that's trying to go somewhere. So every action is an equal and opposite reaction. You got all energy going on all over the place. But if you know that the atmosphere is cool and you still want to generate static electricity, if you think I'm wrong, think about during wintertime how staticky your house gets with the different materials that you're rubbing up against your blankets, how a wool blanket will produce a whole lot of a lightning show underneath your blanket at night. You can see all that energy floating around you. Well, imagine you want to do that on purpose and you want to store that voltage pressure into containers like capacitors and such. We got multiple different types of capacitors for multiple different purposes, from everything from changing an AC wave to a DC, or, you know, smoothing out an AC wave, slowing it down and making it steady, storing a little bit of energy so it's still vibrating in there. It's still the same 50 hertz or 60 hertz. It just has a lot more power behind it. So you're taking basically the equivalence of a glass of water and you're constantly agitating it, shaking it, and keeping these waves going. And it's still the same exact wave because it's still being done at exactly the same timing. So once you understand that everything is like gears in a machine, all these different forces of nature are gears in the machine, now you can start engineering to do things in a completely different and extremely efficient manner. We have the capability, we have the technology. I've been waiting around for the dream team. I've tried and tried and tried to pull together the brilliant minds. But between egos and finances or health issues, everybody's got their own thing going on and nobody seems to want to try to get past all that and stop arguing about what the book says and just try it before you deny it. If you're not going to try it out, then you're not going to know. Science is about testing. It's about observing. It's about, you know, seeing the limits of where you can push something. We know what the laws of physics says. We don't have to rewrite the laws of physics yet until we determine that there's something going on that overrides a certain law of physics, which anti-gravity. Okay, there you go. So what we have the potential of being able to accomplish is mind-blowing, but it takes a lot more than one person in order to be able to come against a system that is, overwhelming. I mean, think about it. You build a free energy device, you get a lot of people's attention, some of which you do not want their attention because they're either going to bribe you, give you a lot of money to shut up, or if you're not willing to take their money or whatever their offer that cannot be refused, then you're, probably going to get rubbed out, so to speak. You know, they suicide people all the time, and people die of strange heart attacks, or lead poisoning and such. That's the system we're up against. And without each other standing together, you're never going to see free energy on the market. You're never going to see free energy in your home because of that type of mindset. Either people's afraid to tell it, or they're not going to want to see how far they can push it because the system is, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I can pay for electricity. I don't mind working a few extra hours a day in order to pay for just the lights in my home. But if you listen to what I got to say, and if you take and try what I'm trying to share with the world, you've already got free electricity. And at the very least, if you're going to be buying electricity from the power grid, at least you use it in the most extreme and efficient manner possible. Now, we can accomplish this together on a small scale, and I'll continue to make videos and do radio shows about, how to do this. And if we work together, we can make our homes at the very least super efficient so that we can save money on electricity. We know there's different types of energy saving devices, but even those can be improved upon. And so with that said, if we reach a super efficiency in your house and my house, now we can take those extra funds and we can focus them into building yet even more devices to show people. And that's how we need a people's power company. We need, you got people for people radio, you got people, people's internet radio, you got Shaziz radio. These are all people oriented groups that gather together to share information to try to better everybody's lives and make things better. Just these groups alone, if we ever decided that we wanted to come together, and, we wouldn't even necessarily have to travel to each other's places because we got this tools and technology and we can do live streams with each other and share, real time. If I can't make something in my shop, you can make it and ship it to me and vice versa. If you can't make something over there, you need something I got, I can ship it to you. Shared resources, shared ideas and stuff like that. We got the networks to do it. And if we could only build the dream team, if we could get the dream team together, then that's what we need, folks. I call it the dream team because it's almost like looking for a unicorn. It's almost like looking for Bigfoot or whatever, You go out there, you find somebody who's really brilliant, and you try to bring them on board, and, differences separate everybody, and that's the problem. It's not a problem to produce free energy. We've already got what we need to do. So it's a matter of fact of, seeing is believing. People want working prototypes, and to give them working prototypes, somebody has to do something with the talent and resources in order to make things to show people that it does indeed work. It does work, folks. I know it works for a fact. Everything that I said to a friend of mine who built a generator worked exactly like I said it was going to work. I spent years and years researching everything that there is to know about alternative energy and so many different devices out there. They all have pluses. And I told them how to do it. and they did it, and it worked perfectly. It worked flawlessly. The generator didn't bog down anymore. Things got cooler, and with that, following that concept of what I showed them, they improved upon that generator, and that generator, it is an electric generator that recharges itself. It is an electric generator that puts out more power than they said was even possible. Unfortunately, I haven't heard from this individual for almost a month now, and it's kind of got me worried because, you know, with that type of technology, once it's proven, you know, then it's dangerous to have in your possession. And so that's the problem. If we could stand together, if we could protect one another, and if we could ensure that we do everything to make sure that everybody knows that things are possible, then we got what we needed. We got what they said they wanted. See, they're always saying, and I say they, I'm talking about the government, I'm talking about the environmentalists, I'm talking about all the green energy people out there, all the people out there complaining about what's wrong with this world instead of talking about what's right with this world. We have exactly what they've asked for. Now, when we try to give it to them, they either bite us or they kill us. They either try to discourage us or they do not stand behind us. They won't allow us to give the world what it is that they keep claiming that we need. So protest after protest for nothing. And they're going to continue to do that. It gets attention, it makes money, whatever. The governments, they're going to continue to go to war. They're going to go to war over resources and, you know, so on down the line. Power structure, you don't want to... You don't want to use our petrol dollar, then we're going to come over there and we're going to sort you out, you know. And suddenly what was one person, a nice guy at one day, or an ally, now is a terrorist that's doing terrible things to his people or whatever. Now, I'm not saying there aren't terrible people in this world, terrible dictators that are doing terrible things. There probably is. And it might be closer to home than what you think. But We have everything necessary to make it happen. But we need to be able to ensure that when this information comes out into a generator that does exactly what I say, that you got a copy, she's got a copy, everybody's got a copy, and there's no way that they can hide it from that point on. Now, I didn't have the resources to help this individual out. This person brought their resources down to help me out. We helped each other out. I used my brain to show them where the weak spots in this particular system was. And it worked. It worked exactly like I said. And now, I'm concerned for this individual. Because I haven't heard from him for a month. I sent messages and tried to get a hold of these people, and maybe they're out of the country. Maybe that's the deal, but I basically got to sit around and wait in order to hear back from them. And Stephen asked me, who is it you helped build the Jenny with Shazez? Well, I really can't put his name out there right now because of the fact that I don't know what's going on. And I don't want to make him more of a target than what he may already be. But if you trust anything I say, you know, I've been consistent all these years. I ain't been lying to nobody. He's got a working device. And it works exactly like I've been telling each and every one of you all these years. I've been telling you what we need to do with this energy that we've got. It works. If you go back and listen to these podcasts, if you watch these YouTube videos and you pay attention to what I'm showing you, these little anomalies, they work. They honestly work. And I got discouraged. I got discouraged. Yeah, I said Stephen's name on it. Well, brother, you don't know the guy's name so they can't get it out of you. Oh, man. I love Steven. He's awesome. Anyway, what I've been trying to share with people is that you take everything you've learned in basic science. You take everything that you've been told about physics. And you take that with a grain of salt. You know that energy. You know that information. And you see how far you can push that information. You test and retest that information. If you know that for this action you get heat and for that action you get cold, that's a tool you can work with. That's another gear in the machine. Everything that I've been talking about all this time are like gears in the machine. They're all pieces of the puzzle. And I put videos out there in a really creative way for a reason. There was a method to my madness. And even going back to the Crazy Old Shaziz website, there was a method to my madness. By far the most worst website ever, because it would give you a seizure if you looked at it. It was something else, but nonetheless, I found a less flashy way to do what it is that I did with that particular website. And until you unlock the minds, until you get people's attention, they're not going to listen. There's so many possibilities that would blow your doors off. The things that we are capable of doing would boggle your mind. Mad science is the fact that here we are in the year 2019, and we still got people on this world starving, is what they say. You've seen the pictures on TV. We still got homeless. We still got wars, rumors of wars, plagues, famines, pestilence. We should be so much further advanced than what we are right now. Steven said, did you video the build and intend to release it at some point sooner than better, bro? The more people who know, the better safety in numbers. You're right. This particular device belongs to him, but everything that I've been telling everyone about how to move energy from one place to the next, and everything that I've been telling everybody how to store, is already out there on YouTube. It's on ShazizRadio.com. It's in the podcast. Every single thing that I was telling everybody about how to use capacitor technology, how to use capacitors for different purposes, and bridge rectifiers, how to guide this energy. Everything from the frequency range of the DDS signal generator's capability to the neodymium magnet accelerator, plasma technology, and the new generator that I've been putting together here recently. When I get that done, you will have an exact replica to the extent of what it does with all the improvements on it right there before your very eyes. And it's a simple build. It's hard for me because of the way that I'm going about doing it, because I want to ensure that everybody can see exactly what's going on inside this system. I've already explained it over and over and over again, but sometimes it don't ring the bell or turn the light on until you actually physically see it with your own two eyes of what's occurring. So the device that I'm putting together would be the equivalence of a cutaway of an engine. You can see what's happening inside that engine. You can see it mechanically with your own two eyes. And that makes everything that I've said, the explanations to what I've said, make perfect sense. That's why I don't use their terminology. That's why I use simple terminology. That's why I explain how water's working. water pressure and current flows and all that. Because I want the average Joe, I want the person who's not an electronics engineer to understand. I want the person who's not mechanically inclined to be able to understand. You see, when you push that door open, what direction it's going. And you know if you grab a hold of that door and you pull it back, you know that motion that you're doing with your arm, that's what's causing this door to come open and closed. And so you can understand that. You know how to open a door, you know how to open a window, you know how to shut a window, you know how to lift the lid off a pot, you know how to step on the lever to push the trash can lid up. So you are, each and every one of you are mechanically inclined. You just don't really take it to the extreme. And so if I'm explaining something to you, I'm trying to explain it in a method by which anyone can understand. And that if you got somebody out there who's paying attention to what you're trying to tell them, and they have a mechanical mind, check out a couple of these videos that I talk about and share. You can build it. You can replicate it. You can salvage parts from existing equipment. I need to take a quick breather, so I'm going to play a little bit more of this one video here, where he's talking about the history of electricity and such.
And they would come here, places like here as well, and see electrical experiments performed, and it was all the rage. So I wanted to show you some of the electrical soiree experiments, some of these early electricians' experiments. And to that end, I have brought my own static electricity generating machines. Now, I've got two, because I'm sort of greedy that way. This one here is called a Wimshurst machine. There's a beautiful example out there in the foyer out there. You can have a look at that. That's a really lovely example. This one's completely modern design. And this came out in about, this was in the middle of the 1800s, so this is 19.
He's talking about a Wimshurst, but listen, if I could build a prototype and put it in each one of your hands, I would do it instantaneously. The hardest part is getting everything to everybody and ensuring that this is why I've been piece by piece trying to show everybody, so that hopefully they'd be building it right alongside me. If you understand the basic concepts of what I'm showing you, you've already got it. You've already got the information. That's why I kept telling everybody, download it, download it. Make sure that you've got this information. Put it on hard copy. Even if this video seems crazy, just save it. It will all make perfect sense.
Century. Wimshurst. This machine here, though, is the one that you're probably more familiar with. This is called a Van de Graaff generator. It was invented by Mr. Van de Graaff, not particularly surprising, in the 1920s. He was American, and he built enormous Van de Graaff generators. And this is certainly the biggest one I've ever seen, and I'm quite scared of it. And I should know, because I built it. We have a static electricity generating machine. We build up static on here. The first and most obvious thing you can do with a static electricity generating machine is generate a lot of static and then make a big spark. Because, well, that's what we all want to see, isn't it? A big spark. So, here we go. We're going to make a big spark, and we'll bring the lights down just a little bit because it should show up slightly better. And we'll see whether this is working for us today. So we're charging it up. I can hear it starting to crackle. Ooh, that was quite a big spark, but it wasn't a very juicy one. It's quite a big one. Right, let's try and go for one more. I'm enjoying this, you can tell. Oh, I'm going to stop there before I burn my motor out. Make sure you discharge. So, okay. We can make a big spark. We can make lots and lots of static electricity. And the way this machine works is basically, rather than... It's doing exactly the same as I was doing with this rod. What we're doing is, rather than rubbing like this, we're using a machine to rub, effectively, electrons off the bottom, carry them up and build them up on the top, and they just pile up on this big dome. And the bigger your globe at the top, the more static you can make. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, those are serving bowls from IKEA. And in fact, that is the entire reason this show exists, because I went into IKEA and I saw them and I thought, oh, I know what I want to do with them. So I built this, and then I thought, now what am I going to do with it? So, yes, anyway. Right, we can make big sparks. Now, the next and obvious thing to do with static electricity is to do what they're doing in this picture here. If you look at the picture here, at the back, there is a lady sort of standing with something in her hand, can't quite work out what it is, but she is being charged up by the electrician. The electrician is passing the charge from his hands. He's got one hand, and I think he's sort of passing it on to his amanuensis, who's sort of standing in the background, and then it's passed, and I can't quite tell what's going on. Basically, they're charging the woman up, which is, let's face it, one of the things they were interested in. What happens when you use this strange electricity? What happens when it encounters people? So, charging up a person. Now, the sparks we were getting off that, I reckon, are in the order of 300,000 volts. About a third of a million volts off this machine. I'm that big. Just about right. So I can charge somebody up with this. But there are two problems. One of them is if you have a pacemaker, it's very bad. And the second one is, but the trouble is most people know whether they have a pacemaker or not. It's not something you don't know about. You tend to know about pacemakers. And there is another problem, though. And this is that there is a heart condition that is a contraindication for taking a very large belt of static electricity. Okay? And I'm not sure how many we've got in here, but there's almost certainly one or two of us that have it, because it's about 1 in 200 to 1 in 300 of the population. It is also completely harmless, I should point out, but it is a contraindication for doing this. I have had a 5-point ECG test to look for this, and I do not have this. So I'm safe-ish. As far as in the broader sense of the word safe. So I can charge myself up to a third of a million volts, should I so wish. Now, I think we know what's going to happen, because you've probably seen it. And it may come as a surprise that despite having quite a significant amount of hair, my hair is the wrong sort of hair for this. Your hair, madam, would be just fine. No, we won't go there. So instead, I brought my own hair, so to speak, which we will use. So I'm going to... It's fine. It's not silly at all. I'm going to stand on this IKEA stool. It's a theme here. And I'm going to charge myself up by placing my hand on here. And then... Oops. A bit far away. Get a bit closer. Is that good? Sounds good, yeah. Turn my back to you. I'm going to charge myself up like this, and we'll see what happens. Are you ready? I hate this. Here we go. Charging myself up, and I can feel all my hairs on the back of my arms standing on end. And is it going up? Yes, is it doing it? Is it good? Is it good? Woohoo! There we go. The problem is, what do you do now? Because I'm all charged up, and I can feel my clothes are starting to do weird things. So what I'm going to do, I'll let go, and turn it off, and I just sort of have to stand here for a little while. And gradually... I lose the electricity comes off me, the static dissipates, and I can tell because you can see all the hairs on my arms. If you're close enough, you can see that they're all standing vertically like this, and I can lose this now, thankfully. I know, it's a shame. So that was another thing they were very keen on. This is one of my favourites.
But what you probably ain't understand, once he charges himself up, he can actually store that energy, and that energy... His body's actually stored that energy. You got all those extra electrons according to electron theory. So the moment that energy has a path to ground, it will dissipate. That's why you can rub your feet on the carpet and walk across there and shock your brother on the ear with that built-up charge, because it lasts there for a while. When your body's interacting with the atmosphere or grounded to the earth or whatever, then, you know, eventually everything will balance itself back out. But the key to that is all this energy can be stored. And that's why I keep talking about capacitor technology, because of the way that capacitors store energy is the same way that a container of water basically stores energy. There's tons and tons of energy around you right now. Even something that you think is a solid mass, it's got energy going on in it right now. Even something that you think is just like a board or whatever. And anytime that there's any outside energy that interacts with it, you get a sound, you get acoustic wave or something like that. You get a vibration. And so all we're doing is basically moving energy from one place to the next, and one reaction causing another reaction. So with that said, taking all those little pieces of the puzzle and putting them together where they needed to be, when you're taking a battery and you want to put power to an electric motor, you know that that battery's got a lot of pressure behind it. It's got a lot of amperage capabilities. It's able to push a lot of power to that battery. So if you put too small of an electrical motor on too large of a battery, then that energy trying to escape from that battery will cause that little electric motor to speed up really super fast beyond its capability. Plus the resistance in the wiring will cause that wiring to get hot and you'll burn it out. So we can make it the right size to allow that much power to come through there at any given time. Only what that doggone electric motor needs. But the way that we're doing it now is we're actually sending too much direct current to those doggone motors. So if you give that energy a place to go outside of just directly to that motor, if you put a buffer in between that electric motor and a buffer between every stage when you want to pull power off of a generator to send back to that battery, you got to make sure that you don't have a direct connection to itself, because it's all trying to balance itself back out. And so if you got a buffer in between the battery, the load, and then between the generator and the load, so on down the line, you can change it from a DC wave to an AC wave. You can speed it up, you can slow it down, you can guide it off and give it a place for that energy to flow. And if that container can never get full, no matter what, because you're pulling power off of it, if you're pulling power off of it, but that container can never get full, it can never overcharge and doesn't become a weak spot. Instead, it's acting as a buffer in case something down the line stops moving, that the assembly line can continue on without any interference. So the moment that electric motor meets any kind of resistance, it has to work harder. When it has to work harder, it generates more heat, and that heat is now a loss that it begins to hinder the system. They say that when you induce a current into a coil of wire, that it produces a counter magnetic field to oppose that first magnetic field. And that's because we're sending that energy out of the generator into the load and right back into the generator again. Now, if you send that energy out of the generator into the load and then you have a storage bank, you're not producing that same effect, because now you still got a place for some of that power to go. It's not trying to shove it back into that battery right out of the gate. Batteries do not like to be charged rapidly. You can put a heavy amperage and you can force power into a battery, and eventually you'll destroy that battery, because the battery gets hot from the resistance of what you just did to it. But if you're putting that power back into that battery in the form of voltage doesn't meet the same resistance as current, a lot of current. Now, current and voltage, they go hand in hand. Current is just, instead of like 1,000 volts one time, you got 1,000 volts 100 times. And so now all of them's combined separate voltages are producing the amount of current flow in order to keep the pipes full, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, if I take a garden hose with a nozzle on it and I spray a high pressure into that pipe, if I got a 2-inch pipe, that pressure is not going to be able to fill that pipe. It'll shoot right through that pipe until it meets resistance and starts to back up. But if something on the other side of that needs a lot of current, all that pressure from that current, then that's not going to be enough to do it until that pipe gets completely full and I continue to put power, that water, into that pipe. And as long as I can keep that pipe full, all I got to do is keep that forward pressure going and I still have the current flow that I needed. And so that's how you take those generators and you make them more efficiently, by understanding if you change that that energy form, instead of trying to push current out, you ramp that voltage up, ramp it up as high as you can get it, and now you've got a lot of pressure. That pressure is not going to meet the same resistance as trying to shove a lot of current down a wire. It's going to skim right across it. And so now when that energy is coming out of that generator and it's going back into that battery, instead of going directly into that battery, I'm dumping it into a buffer zone. I'm dumping it into a bank. And then that battery is absorbing that voltage pressure. And then whenever I'm coming out of that battery, going into the load, now there is a place for that pressure to go. So eventually you get to the point where the battery is completely full and the high voltage is just skimming across, and you always have enough current because that battery is constantly full. It's constantly keeping the plumbing full on the way down the line. The difference is now you don't have the resistance that is producing the heat in the battery or the generator or the load. You have found the perfect balance of how to use that same electricity and allowing the electron to flow naturally instead of trying to shove too much power into any given device at one time. You can put thermoelectric devices that will take and measure the temperature of any given device, and if the temperature gets too hot, it'll send some of that current off in a different direction. If you know the thermal breakdown point of a transistor and you never exceed that thermal breakdown point of the transistor, then that transistor will never get hot. Proof of what I'm saying is that whenever you very first turn that transistor on, it doesn't get hot right out of the gate. It only gets hot after some time of too much current flowing through it. The bridge rectifiers that I use in that storage video that shows all the capacitors that's being charged up by a DDS signal generator, I'm only putting 5 volts input. I'm getting about 9 volts, give or take, on the output of the signal generator. I'm producing 60 hertz square wave that is pulsing a microwave oven transformer. So it's ramping the voltage up, dropping the current down, and I don't need the current at this point in the game. All I need to do is fill up the containers, which are the AC start capacitors that I'm using as a storage bank. And then that AC wave goes down the line and hits that bridge rectifier. That bridge rectifier does not like current. If you push too much current to them, they're rated for 1,000 volts at 100 amps. And so that means that I can put that much power through it, and I will be able to still use it until it reaches its thermal breakdown and it burns up. But the method that I'm talking about, it still sends the AC wave, and that voltage still travels through the rectifier, and the rectifier still does its job without the current. And then from that side there, I bring the energy out of the bridge rectifier. Now it is a DC wave, and it's going forward, and it's charging up another storage bank of high voltage capacitors. From that point on, those high voltage capacitors, which are storing pressure, are pushing that voltage pressure down into what they call super capacitors or boost caps. Now that turns that what would normally be capacitor technology into more of a, what would be a battery type technology. So taking that energy from stage at a time, moving it, changing it, and bringing it back around, I can send that energy right back into a normal battery without harming that battery. The voltage isn't going to harm the battery until the battery becomes overpressurized. And if you're pulling a load off there, then it can never become overpressurized, but it can still charge. It can still get the pressure differential on the difference of electrons, more electrons on one plate than the other, so that it still is a charged battery. So from that point, you just cut out all the losses in that system just by understanding how that energy actually travels. You cut out all the losses of that system. And even to the extent of when you get to the point of wanting to run your load, you know how much power it normally takes. You can take that energy off of that battery, run it through another buffer zone before it ever even gets to the load itself, and so you can balance that buffer zone out so that only the amount of power necessary to run the electric motor or the load that you want to run is sending it to it. We're burning out light bulbs and appliances all the time because we're sending too much power to them. And what do you do with that extra power? You guide it downstream. And so far, you just increased your efficiency astronomically because you don't have all the losses that you had prior. You're pulling the electricity off of your power line, coming through your wall socket, and it's constantly coming in. No matter how much power that doggone electric fan can use, people keep thinking, oh, we're drawing too many amps. You're not drawing anything. You're not drawing electricity. That voltage pressure is pushing that energy into your wall socket, and it's looking for a place to go. So between your wall socket and your breaker box and the power pole outside, the same thing's occurring. The more power that thing pushes in there, if you used it up quickly enough, you wouldn't be causing that thing to get hot. It's getting hot because it's pushing too much power, and it has nowhere to go. The energy wave, the AC wave, is going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and it's building up pressure behind there. That's why when Tesla said, when you hit that knife switch, he tried to figure out why it was that there was a sudden surge of power and then everything would level off. And every time he did that, there was a sudden surge of power. It ramped the voltage way up there. And that's why today we have Tesla coils. That's why today we have radio towers. That's why we have cell phones. Because he understood how he could actually change that wave. It wasn't the same power that was coming out of the wall outlet. It got changed to a higher frequency, higher voltage. But even that higher frequency, higher voltage can be stepped down back into the same amount of power that you had before. I'm going to play a little bit more of this.
And this is one that they did, although they didn't do it on this scale. So, pie dishes. Discharge. Yeah. And that's the danger of this demo is forgetting to discharge. Right, so they go on there like that. Now, the reason my hair stands on end is the same reason, or stood on end, is the same reason that the little floaty thing floats in the air. It's because it's all the same charge. It's all negative charges all over me, all over my hair. So the strands of hair become coated in negative charges. They push away from the other strands and that lifts them into the air. In the same way that these pie dishes become coated in negative charge. Now the big ones, come on. One more. Yep. Two. One. Yeah. Can you two give me a hand and pick these up? Excellent. That's what I like to see. Putting youth to work. There we go. Brilliant. Thank you. Pick them all up for me. So yeah, so the Pi dishes become charged with negative charge. They become very electrically charged. 300,000 volts. The electrons push against each other, pushing away, and it lifts them into the air. Brilliant. Round of applause for my volunteers. They have just about done. Oh, look at that. Genius. Oh, and one more there. I did this morning. They just scrunched them. It was a mess. Right, excellent. So, everything we've done so far is about... they're all experiments where things have become charged with the same charge. But you can go a bit... you can do something a bit different for that. Now, there was one of these electricians. There was a guy called Stephen Gray, who became quite a popular electrician in the 18th century. Now, Stephen Gray was an interesting chap. He actually was an orphan. It's quite an interesting story, which I'll tell you very briefly. He was an orphan. He was a pauper. And he went to one of the orphanages in the centre of London, which we'll come to meet in a second. And he taught himself science. And he taught himself electrical experimental science and stuff. And he became an electrician, like this gentleman here. And he raised himself up. He climbed the greasy pole of social climbing, so to speak, and pulled himself up by his own bootstraps and became a gentleman through science and the art and science of electricity, the art of demonstrating and the science of electricity. And one of his experiments that he was particularly well known for was this one. This is what is known as the flying boy experiment. Now, what he used to do is he would go back to his alma mater, whose name I have remembered, Charterhouse, poor school, and he would go to his charter house, and he would borrow a poor orphan, and he would take the poor orphan with him, it was a boy, to the electrical soiree. And then what they would do is they would suspend the orphan, they would suspend the orphan from a plank attached to silken ropes. You can see them, silken ropes, insulating ropes. And then they would charge the poor orphan boy up. And you can see Gray's hand coming in at the side, charging the orphan up. So the boy would become charged up. Now the thing is, he would become charged up with, say, negative charge. There are lots of electrons on him, so he's minus. And everything else is, relatively speaking, plus, positive. And like charges attract. So what would happen is that then things would leap onto the boy and stick to the boy. And the favourite thing that works particularly well is feathers, which is what's in the middle. You can see the feathers sort of flying up. They're flying up to stick to him, and they would stick all over the child. You can also do it with bits of foil and stuff like that, but feathers is the simplest thing to do. So I thought we should be doing this in this talk. Now, it's a couple of problems. First of all, it turns out to be difficult to get Charterhouse to lend you orphan boys these days, because they don't do that anymore. But the second thing is, it's also immoral. And you can't get it past an ethics committee. So, we can't do that. So I thought to myself, what can we possibly put feathers on? What is the only sensible thing to stick feathers to? And the answer is, clearly, a rubber chicken. So, this is my rubber chicken, and it's called Stretch. Say hello to Stretch, everybody. Yes, now you're talking to a rubber chicken. Good. Excellent. So what we're going to do with Stretch is we are going to charge him up, and we are going to stick feathers to him. And for that end, I'm going to use the second of my static electricity machines, because this machine, this is slightly different to this machine. This machine builds up negative charge. This machine separates charge, and what you end up with is positive charge on one side and negative charge on the other, and it makes nice big fat sparks when I turn it on. It's got two counter-rotating plates, the Wimshurst machine, slightly complicated to explain, in fact completely impossible to explain, but you get these big fat juicy sparks in the middle there. Can you see those? It's actually rather more reliable than these machines. Van de Graaff's are notorious for not working when you need them to. And anybody that works with a Van de Graaff will have a hairdryer about their person, as I do, in the back, because you hairdry Van de Graaffs. You have to dry them out because they're very susceptible to humidity. These machines, winters, are a much better bet. So what we're going to do is we're going to attach Stretch to one end of this device here. So, first I need to give Stretch a conductive coat, which always worries him slightly. So we take Stretch and we wrap him in foil. Yes, we're doing the experiment again. And then what we do is we suspend Stretch from the special feather replacement device. And then we make sure we've discharged. Take these off like so. We attach that to there. So what we're going to do is we're going to attach Stretch to the negative end. Here, or is it the positive? Not quite sure. It all depends slightly on fate and the day of the week, like that. So Stretch here will become negatively charged. At the opposite end here, I'm going to attach myself, it's only fair, to a bucket of feathers here, and this kind of pointy whisky thing. Technical term that. And what will happen, we hope, is when I stand on here, stand on this IKEA stool, so I'm going to charge up the feathers with positive charge. Stretch is negatively charged. And just like the flying boy experiment, what will happen is the feathers should leap across and stick to Stretch, unplucking the chicken. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the most stupid thing you are ever going to see in this lecture theatre, and it pains me to have to do it here, because it is a noble and august place. So, are you ready, Stretch? No, probably not. Am I ready? Yes. Are you ready, ladies and gentlemen? Here we go. Everything wired up correctly? Yes. Turn on. Right. I'm charging up here. We charge up the feathers, and they start to leap. Nearly. Ha! Come on. They're going away from him. That's not supposed to happen. Stretch, feathers, sticking to the chicken. And the chicken has been sort of ish unplucked. And once again, I've trashed the place. Hold on, I'll come around here and turn this off. And now what I have to do is discharge it. When I discharge, I'm going to discharge the system, and you'll see that a lot of the feathers will fall off, because they really are sticking there because of electricity. And I get a little tumbling of feathers. Right, we'll unplug Stretch.
So, whenever he's charging up the feathers positively, basically, what you see going on in magnets, you can mimic with static electricity. Either they're going to repel from positive light charges, whether it be two negatives or two positive, or they're going to attract. And so, essentially, you know, when you charge that feather up positively and the other items charge negatively, you get that attraction. So there's another gear that we can work with in order to understand how energy is actually traveling. Now, like I said before, whether you subscribe to the electron theory or not, it's the easiest way to explain of what's going on with the standard model of what's actually being taught in school. I honestly believe there's something a whole lot different than meets the eye than what we've actually been taught, that you could basically you'd end up having to rewrite some of what physics says because of what we believe to be, occurring, because the standard model is electron theory. Some people, when I talk like this, they get really frustrated, get mad. Well, you know, you're just spitting in the face of hundreds of years worth of research and researchers and trying to tell them that they're wrong or whatever. It's not that. It's if you ever want to get to the basic, where we can see how far we can actually go, You're not going to get there by putting a brick wall up in front of yourself. Anyway, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand mad scientists. What you need to be is open-minded to look around in nature and see how nature does things. You got a really powerful wind. It has the capability of taking your house right off the foundation. That's worst case scenario. But you know that with a certain amount of pressure, you can turn turbines and then you can turn generators. Right now, the wind generators that are out there, they work, but they're really super inefficient. What you should be doing is, instead of trying to push current out of those, which is actually going to feed back into the generator and turn that generator into a motor now, and make that motor have to, that wind have to be harder in order to keep up with the demand. You have to have a constant wind blowing on them things to overcome that resistance of that energy that's trying to flow back into that generator head. But if you take that energy off of that generator, you get that electron flow moving in one direction, you keep it moving in one direction, you don't allow it to go back in, you produce high voltage instead of high current, and you send that out there, you store that, you get the same amount of power, but you don't have that generator having to work harder, which means in lower wind speeds, your generator will be just as good as it was in the higher wind speeds. So it just takes a basic understanding of what's actually going on with electricity. We know we can do a lot of cool stuff with electricity. Back in the day when they called themselves electricians, they were like magicians. And it was for show, it was for amusement purposes. Nowadays, people go by the name of electrician and you think that means that they've been through a lot of college and they have a lot of knowledge on how electricity works. They know what the book says, and they know what the standard models, what you got to put on everything out there in order for it to not catch fire is. But I'm telling you folks, if it's getting hot when you're using that energy, then it's being done wrong. You're using too much power. I haven't googled it up in a long time. I've said look it up, cold electricity. But if you think about cold electricity, If it's not getting hot, it can't never reach its thermal breakdown point, which means it'll never fail. I'm trying to look it up here. Sitting here typing with one finger. Ah! There we go. We'll go to my least favorite places, Wikipedia, and see what they have to say about cold electricity. Free energy suppression conspiracy theory. Oh boy, I saw that coming. Ah! Free energy suppression or new energy suppression is a conspiracy theory that technologically viable, pollution-free, no-cost energy sources are being suppressed by government corporations, groups. Devices allegedly suppressed include perpetual motion. There's another red flag that Wikipedia's got it all wrong. Cold fusion generators, torus-based generators, reverse-engineered extraterrestrial technology. See, there's some more craziness in there. And other generally unapproved low-cost energy sources. The alleged suppression or weakening is the claim to have occurred since the mid-19th century and allegedly perpetrated by various government agencies, corporate power, special interest groups, and fraudulent inventors. The special interest groups are usually claimed to be associated with the fossil fuel nuclear industry, whose business models were threatened or whatever. That didn't even give me what I was looking for, but you see how that works. Anything that ain't in the book, you're gonna get like that. You're gonna get the same doggone deal. Let's see. Cold Power was a brand of what? I can't find it. Just Google up cold electricity and find it for yourself. I'm just tired. So, welcome to secretsofcoldelectricity.com. Let's see here. Hopefully, maybe I get something. But years of scanning the internet, reading after reading more information, it's mind-blowing how much you'll find out here. That's not even what I'm looking for again. Welcome to secretsofcoldelectricity.com. This blog is for people who have an interest in Tesla, Bedini, and cold electricity in general. If this sounds like you have, look around. I'm sure you'll find something interesting, and that's all that shows up on the page. That's crazy. Oh, you got to open the PDF. I don't want to do that. Probably get a virus. Anyway. So, once again, terminology. I'm trying to find it. Ed, blast it. This is terrible for... I'll let you listen to him while I'm looking for that.
So, flying boy experimental. Unplucking the chicken, call it what you will. Oops, sorry. And we'll put him back over here. Now, horse-stretched, indeed. Abused and mistreated. So, the electricians of the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th century were very popular chaps. But there's a big question that we have to ask ourselves. And the big question is this. If I was about to give you a big electric shock, which electric shock would you rather have? Would you rather have an electric shock of 300,000 volts and a tiny current? Or would you rather have 240 volts and a current, which is measured in amps, of just 1 amp? So, hands up if you want 300,000 volts. Okay. And hands up if you want 240 volts. I'm not telling you. Either way. And hands up if you really don't want the shock. Please don't do it. Yes. Yeah, indeed. Right. Okay. If you said 240 volts, stand up. Stand up. Stand up, all the 240 volt people. There's got to be some more of you. Some more at the back. We all saw who it was. Yes, stand up, madam. You especially. Stand up. Because you're all dead. I'm sorry, but that will kill you. Okay, here we go. Right, everybody. Put your hands around the bottom of your chairs like this. We've wired it all up. Are you ready? On the count of three. Three, two... No, I'm not going to do anything. But if I could, I would. Oh, man alive, I would. We are actually going to, for the one show, we're going to try and break the record for the world's longest human electric circuit. But that's another story. Yeah, the thing is, it's current that kills and volts that jolt. That's what you've got to remember. Current that kills, volts that jolt. A single amp of current doesn't seem like much, but it's enough to kill you. And in fact, if you put your finger in the mains, so yes, I am talking about AC, if you put your finger in the mains, you will get 10 amps, something like that, maybe, flowing through you, which is more than enough to see the end of you. But the big question is, what is the difference? And this is one of the things that a lot of people just don't have a handle on. What is the difference between voltage and current? Right, let's get some volunteers. What we're going to do, I need a bunch of kids, I need a whole load of you. Let's start with, let's get all four of you, and then can we get some from the row behind? Any of you lot want to volunteer as well? Yes? Do we get all four of you as well? Do you want to volunteer? You don't need to come down. There's a chance for volunteers later. Right, you lot come down here, come down here, I'll get you to the bloke in the fly emmer at top uni arsenal, and you can come over here. I don't want you right at the end there. And then the rest of you form a line, and step, take a step forward, sir. And then take a step to that side. And then form a line, because there's quite a lot of you. And what's your name, sir?
Max,
you are very important. You're the person whose name I am going to remember. So, Max, I'm going to put that there. That's important, okay? So what we have here is I have some little glowy-in-the-dark ball thingies. Ooh, that one's flashing. This one's green today, and this one's red. And can we bring the lights down a squeak, please? And what we're going to do is I'm going to pass these down the line, okay? Now, you guys are my electrical wire. You are my copper wire. Are you are or is? I'm not quite sure whether it's plural or singular. And when this electron flows down the wire, we are passing a current. Are you ready? Get in the queue, get in the line. That's it, nice straight line. Here we go. Here comes the electron, passing down the wire. The electron goes down the wire. Matt, put it in the box behind you. It goes down the wire. We are not passing many electrons. Okay, here comes another one. Right? But what we are doing is we are passing a small current. Here comes another one. But I can increase the current that flows down this wire. Turn some of these on in advance. By passing more electrons down the wire. Are you ready for more electrons? Here they come. Hop. Hop. So now we are passing more electrons. Turn them on quickly. And that one on there. We're passing more electrons, which means we are passing more current. The number of electrons that flow down the wire is equal to the current flowing. Okay? So electrons, number of electrons, is current. Now, I'm just going crazy. Not worry about that. Now, the thing is, as electrons pass down the wire, they create friction. Just as if you know, when you rub your hands together or whatever it is, you get friction, your hands get hot, yeah? So as the electron passes down this wire, it actually heats up the wire. And if you pass enough electrons, the wire gets very hot. And that's the problem with current. This is why current kills you. It's the heat that it generates. There are a couple of other issues. So what is voltage then? Right, voltage. So far, I'm going to pass a nice gentle current down. Here it comes. Here it comes. We're not doing much work, are you? They're not putting much effort in. I think what we need to do is we need to hold your hands up in the air, up like this, and pass it way up in the air like that. A little bit more effort. A little bit, not much. Now stand on one leg. And do it standing on one leg, with your hand in the air. This is where it gets exciting. And do I dare go the next way? Yes, okay, hop. And now we're going to do this hopping. And we're passing the same amount of current. This one's gone off. But we are doing a lot more work as we pass the current. Which means the voltage is greater, okay? The voltage is the amount of work you do as the current flows down the wire. Max, you're not hopping. Right, round of applause for my volunteers. There you go. Thank you. Well done. Here, let me take that one off you. So, current is the number of electrons. Is that still on? Can't tell. It is now. And voltage is the amount of work you have to do to get the electrons down the wire. Which is why it doesn't really matter how much work you have to do. So that this machine produces 300,000 volts, and all that really means is that it's got enough energy there to push the electrons through air a distance of nearly 20 centimetres, okay? Because every centimetre in air is about 15,000 volts in dry air. It's probably a bit less here, actually. So this machine is probably running about 200,000, because it's quite humid. Right, where next? So, there is one other question, though, that science hadn't tackled at this point. And we're starting to get a handle on all of this electrical science going on at this time. But the big question that remained unanswered was, what is lightning then? Because lightning looks awfully lot like a spark, doesn't it? When you make a spark in this machine, it looks like a kind of a miniature lightning bolt. And the big question was, is it the same? It was this guy, Benjamin Franklin. We come across Benjamin Franklin, we know who Benjamin Franklin is, yes? Yes, maybe not. Benjamin Franklin is one of the founding fathers of America. He's also a brilliant politician, a fabulous statesman. He's a theologian. He's a philosopher. He's a writer. And he is a scientist. And in 1750, he suggested this experiment to answer the question of, is lightning the same as static electricity? Are they the same? And what he suggested they did is he suggested that you fly a kite into a thunderstorm. And the kite's line will become wet from the rain, so it will become conductive. And then lightning will strike the kite, and lightning will pass down the wire, and you will get electricity from a key that's hanging on the end. You can see a key. And you will prove, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that lightning and electricity are one and the same thing. Now, Benjamin Franklin never performed this experiment, which is a good thing, because it's incredibly dangerous. A man called Thomas François Dalibard, who was clearly a Frenchman, in May of 1752 performed this experiment just outside Paris. And just outside Paris, what he did was, rather than fly a kite, he erected a very large metal rod into the air. And he put the metal rod into a wine bottle, presumably because he was French. And he had some wine bottles. And then what happens is he waited for a thunderstorm to come near. Now, this picture here's illustration from afterwards, shows a sort of a lightning bolt in the sky. This did not happen. What happened is as the thunderstorm came near, he started to get sparks coming off the metal rod to his knuckle. As he presented his knuckle, he got sparks coming off. You always do it to your knuckle because you've got less nerves, so it doesn't hurt so much. Simple. So he said, that's it, right, proof positive, lightning, electricity, the same thing. And that was all the proof we needed. Lightning did not strike. And in fact, they repeated this experiment. Somebody tried to repeat this experiment. A guy called Riffmann, who was a German, you can tell, in St. Petersburg, the year later, in 1753, he did this. And lightning did strike the metal rod, and he died. Because he was standing at the bottom of the metal rod, and the lightning went through him, which is fatal. If you get struck directly by lightning like that. So, but they proved that lightning was electricity. So, but that does beg the question, what should you do in lightning storms? I need a volunteer. I need a volunteer who has no shame. Let's have a look. Let's have a look. Young lady, yes, you're in the middle. Do you have any shame? Good, come on up. We will discover. Right, you come down and I'll just get myself ready over here. Right, come on down and come and stand sort of right in the middle, underneath. Yes, that'll do it. No, only joking. What's your name?
Kayla.
Right, stand there, face the audience that way. Kayla, what we're going to do is a little sort of little role play here for us. Imagine you've gone for a walk. You've gone for a nice long walk. You're out in the countryside. Huge open field. Maybe you're in Lincolnshire, something like that. Big fields, okay? Nothing for as far as you can see. And you think, it's lovely, it's great here. And then suddenly, a thunderstorm rolls in. It's like in the films, you know, it comes in and lightning begins to strike in the middle and behind you and in front of you on the side. Kayla, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Well, Kayla, you are... This is Kayla, isn't it? I'm very bad at names. You are a very intelligent young lady. I can see that. So you brought with you an umbrella because, you know, that seems like a good idea, isn't it? So you put the umbrella up, don't you? Yep. Just humour me. You put the umbrella up, which we know is a bad idea. But why is it a bad idea? Surely this is rhetorical questions. Don't put your hands up. All my questions are rhetorical. Why is it a bad idea, Kayla? This is the reason it's a bad idea. Right, lightning has to jump from kilometres up into the sky, down through air. It takes 15,000 volts in dry air, a lot less in wet air. It's raining, it'll be wet. So maybe 5,000 volts per centimetre. To jump from the top of that distance, which is about a metre, we're looking at maybe 500,000 volts or something like that. Okay, that's a big voltage. That's a lot of energy we need to push the current through. So if the lightning can go down this metal rod, and that will take no voltage because it's a really good conductor, it's going to do that. So it jumps. Rather than striking here, it will go bzzz, and it will strike here. It will go down the metal. You're actually a pretty good conductor as well, it turns out, because you're full of liquid. So it will go up your arm, through your heart, stop your heart, down, through, at the bottom of your leg. Big, horrible burns, you're dead. The casualty rate here is high. Don't go anywhere, we're not finished. Because, okay, let's try another scenario. Let's imagine that there is a single solitary tree. Yeah, you're looking dubious. But there's a single solitary tree in this huge Lincolnshire field. It's a wobbly tree. Which possibly needs a little work. This prop. But anyway, imagine this is a tree. And there's a tree. So what do? You run, you hide, you shelter under the tree. No? It will protect you from lightning. Shelter under the tree for me. Hold the tree in the middle. Because it's a bit wobbly. It does genuinely protect you from lightning, because the thing is, if you stand under something very tall, it will protect everything. What you do is you draw a line, two lines from the top, 45 degrees down, and if you are inside that triangle, you will not be struck by lightning, because the lightning will preferentially strike the taller thing. So the lightning will strike the tree, and not you. So you won't be struck by lightning. Unfortunately, a lightning strike has approximately 30,000 amps. So all that current flows through the trunk of the tree, and the trunk of the tree is full of liquid. And all of that current, all of those electrons, just like in my wire, heat up the inside of the tree, and all of the liquid boils. And when it boils, it turns into steam, and steam takes up more space than liquid. So it goes from this to this, and the tree explodes, and you die because all the shrapnel hits you. So don't hide under trees. In fact, that's even more dangerous than putting an umbrella up.
Alright, so I didn't necessarily find exactly what I was looking for. One of these articles out here said cold electricity presents a form of electric energy without electron flow. And this is what I was trying to talk about, you know, that there might be something different than going on than what we actually think. And so until I get an actual way to show, to demonstrate what it is that I'm talking about, then it's still theoretical, just like everything else. And even to the extent when you talk about the electron theory, you know, the key word is theory. Nobody's ever seen the electron. You know, we got an idea from theories and math and everything, what's actually going on, but even your best guess is just that. It's still a guess. But either way, putting all that high-tech stuff aside and just bringing it down to the simple of observable science, what you know was going on here and there. If you had a form of cold energy, cold electricity, whether it be radiant energy or whatever, it doesn't have the power in it to kill you, but can flow right around you. Just like, you know, whenever you get a static discharge when your brother rubs his feet on the carpet, there's a lot of voltage there, so your nerve endings do interact from it, and, you know, it actually can hurt. But it won't kill you because there's not a lot of amperage, a lot of current flowing through this. And so it's not going to overwhelm your electrical system in your body. Basically, that's exactly what I just explained earlier about how this energy is traveling from that signal generator through the transformer. And it's coming in the form of voltage. But when it gets to the capacitors and it stores that power back up, now you have back the dangerous portion where you wouldn't want to go over there and touch that capacitor because it's fully charged and it can instantaneously discharge and then it can kill you. It has a lot of stored power. So bringing the power in quickly with high voltage, and since voltage is pressure, it's like blowing up a balloon, you can store that pressure. And if you see my video physics toy where I took the balloon inside of a bottle and I had a hole drilled in one side, I could actually hold on to that hole. After I blew the balloon up, I could hold on the hole, leave the lid open, and the balloon would stay full of air. And because there was a difference behind there was a stronger vacuum from the balloon trying to release its energy, it produced a vacuum on the other side. But I could also take and close the lid and then release my finger over that hole, and then the energy would still stay in there. Even though there was air pressure behind that balloon, it still wasn't able. There was no path for that energy to go. That physics toy basically explains on how you can store energy and use it on demand when you want. A capacitor, if you think of a capacitor like a balloon, and the voltage like pressure to blow up that balloon, and the more balloons you get blown up, the more stored energy you have. So if you have a huge storage bank, you can fill that up with a lot of power, and now you can turn that power back into the current watts and amps that everybody keeps hollering about. And all you have to do is to ensure that you have a constant flow of energy moving forward. That constant pressure will continue to come in faster, and you can actually drain it out on the other side. At the very least, it would extend the life time of how long you can use that power before, you know, you run completely out. Capacitors will instantaneously discharge if you give it a short path to from positive to negative. They'll balance themselves out. Plus, you'll get a big old release, big old spark going on. A big discharge as the capacitor shorts. But if you already got the load connected to that capacitor, you can use that capacitor just as if it was a battery. So hopefully you understood what it was that I was trying to share with you today about energy and how it actually moves from point A to point B. Electricity madness is the fact that, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm trying to tell everybody that although we're using this energy and it works like we're using it incredibly inefficiently, And if nobody's willing to listen to an alternative view of how to use that energy, then we're going to continue to do what it is we do. And until we can get everybody on board with, you know, you bring your toolbox together with my toolbox, and we got a larger toolbox and more that we can accomplish. You bring your talents and your knowledge and your research, and together we end up with the dream team. That's what we need. We need a people's electrical company, you know, so we can generate power. And once we got these machines online, then we don't have to keep charging and raising prices on things. It's already done. That's the whole problem right now, because of the supposed scarcity of fuel or coal or even nuclear power. When they talk about building these radioactive rods, it's really expensive, you know, all this kind of stuff. Would you listen to this man explain how energy moves and things that that you can get just static electricity alone to do? And it doesn't even scratch the surface of what our capabilities are. We can take and pull energy right out of the air. We're surrounded in water as far as that goes. If you live in a humid climate, you can use dehumidifier style technologies, a temperature difference, to actually produce moisture that, you know, will, you know, basically pull water right out of the air. And so we have all the answers. We have all the solutions, all the pieces of the puzzle. Now, bringing the resources together to actually build devices that we can put in every single person's hand, a prototype that they know it and it can no longer be suppressed, that's the trick of the whole deal. That is the part that makes me say that the hardest job on earth is to be a free energy advocate, and having the world, even the ones that claim to want it, clean, renewable, alternative energy, be the ones that fight hardest to suppress it. And even the highly, supposedly highly educated will sit there and try to argue till you're blue in the face that you don't know what you're talking about, when in fact I've spent my entire life studying how things function. I paid attention in science classes, and I know the forces of nature like gears in a machine, and the different types of energy generating device, and it's simple to understand. And all you need is a little bit of knowledge of basic science, and you can get that here at Shaziz Radio on the Mad Science Show. And I answer questions. I can talk to you on Skype. There's a, you know, same username. Add me to your Skype contacts. Let's have a chat. Get in the chat room. I'm hoping to do some more live streams on YouTube and on Twitch, so that I can share you know, the newest devices that I'm putting together. But pay attention to all of them, even if it seems ridiculous, even if it seems simple, because I have to put this information out there in a way that you know, is going to get in people's minds. Once I show you something, you already know it. All right, and then if you test it and you repeat it and it still works for you, then you can verify everything that I'm showing you. If I'm showing you that you can store power in a capacitor, you can best believe you can store power in a capacitor. And I'll show you the best way to do that as well. So with that said, I got to get on out of here. Stay tuned for the Music with Kara Hour. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Mad Science. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.